day.
Yes, indeed, indeed. 866-90-ANA. Screwed my name up. 901 Adam, how say you? Time to take your phone calls. Wide open, by the way. Nothing on the board. So 866-901-ADAM. Give us a call. Doesn't matter what topic it is because it's how say you time. All right, let's see. Jeff Probst in studio from Survivor. Jimmy Kimmel's going to be on the show today. What can Adam complain about? Dana Gould in studio helping with a little Huel. His Huel's the best. I don't know why. My Huel sounds bumpkin, but his sounds bumpkin gay.
Oh, boy. This is nice.
He has great. He gives great Huel. So Dana Gould and a truly funny cat. Dana Gould coming in studio today as well. Good morning, Teresa Strasser.
Good morning, Adam Carolla.
Morning, Bald Brian.
Hi, boy.
Hey, let me ask you guys something or ask what you think about this. I was doing a whole bunch of interviews yesterday, a little bit of it. I had about four or five of these things lined up. Lots of press stuff coming up, Dancing with the Stars stuff and some stuff with my movie The Hammer coming out March 21st. And, you know, each time somebody got me started about making the movie and what it was like and any advice to young filmmakers and what that process was like and what the undertaking was like, I'd get about two syllables in and then I'd start getting angry. And, you know, at a certain point, I was basically saying, and they said, how did the process go? So you wrote the script and so you, you took it around town and you pitched it to the various studios and entities. And then what happened? And I said, nothing happened. I pitched it with, had a good script. I was a name that people recognized and who had some body of work behind him that people seemed to know and respect to some degree in the comedy department. And I pitched it everywhere in town until I was blue in the face. And everyone turned it down. And then we rattled the can and we raised about $1 million. And we went out and made the movie ourselves. So nobody ever, you know, because people would say, well, who stepped up and made the movie? And the answer would be nobody. And then I started to get a little angry because I said at the time I just felt rejection. I just felt like, I guess this is harder than I thought, or I guess I don't have as much street cred as I thought, or maybe the script's not as good as I thought. But then 9 months, 7 months, a year later, the movies that they had in the pipelines, the comedies, as I hold my fingers up in quotes, started to come out, and I started to see The Comebacks, which was a comedy that David Koechner, a friend of ours who came in here, starred in, sort of sports spoof genre thing that came out from Fox Atomic, who turned us down flat. Good Luck Chuck and The Heartbreak Kid and a whole slew of what I would label abortions, essentially.
Well, like, it doesn't hurt to lose to a legend, you know, in sports.
Right.
It can't hurt to, you know,
right,
lose out on a pitch session to these.
I went back and would find these movies and watch these movies. And, no disrespect. I'm sure it was just a payday for our buddy Koechner and Carl Weathers. But I saw The Comebacks.
I intentionally interested.
I bought it. It wasn't one of these like, hey, this isn't a very good comedy. It's more like, hey, this isn't a comedy. This didn't seem like a movie. Like, it blew whale ass. It's like, I always say this. If my mom got up and did stand-up comedy, you wouldn't say, oh, she's a bad stand-up comic. No, no, no. That's not fair to bad stand-up comics. My mom would stand there and tremble and hold the mic, and you'd hear feedback for 20 minutes, and then she'd drop it and walk off stage. You wouldn't go, she's not a very funnier than Janine Garofalo, but you wouldn't go, oh, that's a bad stand-up comic. You'd go, that's not a comedian. The Comebacks was not a movie.
Right.
It just was a horrible abortion of a, it was a turd that was on fire that was sucked out of a teen's vagina with a shop vac and then put in a medical waste container. And I put sat across.
Put it on the box.
I sat across the people who were making that movie a year and a half ago, and they were telling me about it and telling me how they didn't have room for our movie. So each time I would do an interview with somebody, they'd say, wow, most people won't come out and say names or talk about it. And I was like, F those people. F this industry. I sat there with my hat. My proverbial hat in hand, trying to pitch our very good script with our very nice little movie that felt good, that had a nice range to it, that had some good laughs and some good heart and made people feel good leaving the theater and so on and so forth, to about 30 different places. They all turned it down flat. And then I saw the onslaught of, you know, Sandler and, you know, David Spade. And, you know, in the meantime, I was watching movies like Benchwarmers and things like that. These movies are not, again, they're not bad movies, because to call them a bad movie would suggest they were movies. They are less than bad movies. They're junk.
Well, just like there's no shame in getting knocked out by Muhammad Ali.
Right. Right. This was not
turned down in favor of
this was like getting knocked out by a coat rack. And I just thought, you know, it really, what you need, Rob Schneider needs to crank out another turd. Spade needs to crank out another turd. And again, I just sat back in anxious anticipation to see all these great movies that were going to be coming out instead of our movies, all the ones they gave the nod and the green light to instead of ours. But here's my point. When I gave these interviews, I would say that, and they'd say, oh, wow, most people don't do that, or wow, you're taking a chance, or wow. And I was like, well, first off, F these people. Secondly, what do I care? They didn't want to work with us the first time, so F all you idiots, and then we'll do it on our own, because there's a way to do it on your own. You rattle the can, you make the money, you work with the people you want to work with, and then you distribute the movie yourself, or you find a distributor after you've made the movie. You don't need these retards looking at your work and looking down their nose at you. But Jesus Christ, getting turned down, especially in the comedy department, what is the batting average of this town with the comedies? I mean, people, the reason people go ape crap over the Junos and the Little Miss Sunshines
and
the Napoleon Dynamites. Like, when you look at Napoleon Dynamite, it's not a great comedy. It's not a great piece of artistic work or anything. No, but you put it in between Benchwarmers, The Comeback, and When Chuck Met Larry, and all of a sudden it's Dr. Effing Zhivago, right?
People always describe them as fresh. That's the word you always hear. And the reason is it's slightly different than everything else you see.
Right.
People are dying for something that's slightly different.
Slightly different, but I'm making a second argument.
Right.
The other comedies it's up against are non-comedies. I mean, many of them.
I would have to agree.
Our batting average is retarded in this town when it comes to comedies. I mean, even the, you know, even when you get the Farrelly Brothers and the Heartbreak Kid and Ben Affleck, I mean, Ben Stiller, even that thing was a turd.
The Night at the Museum, the Heartbreak Kid,
right.
Both of those I couldn't watch.
I'm just saying this. It's one thing to have a guy who bats 750 tell you how to hold the bat and why you haven't made the softball team. It's another thing to see a guy with a wind-up beanie who's holding the bat from the thick end and drooling onto a desk explaining to you how baseball works. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it must be very gratifying now to have done it your own way, to know that the film is better than all of the movies that they were going to make, that
well,
they have made.
I humbly think so, but we're not done yet.
Yeah.
We must make money.
Yeah,
and
that's...
And again, everyone's thing is like, well, who do you want to thank? Answer, nobody. Who do you want to yell at? Answer, everybody who turned us down, you retards. And I don't know about form and etiquette and whatever, but A, what do I care if I piss these people off? I have a daytime job, number one, F you. And then secondly, you're the ones who didn't want to work with me in the first place. So
yeah,
what
still,
do I...
It still feels ballsy and people don't name names. Usually.
Oh, yeah. I got to work with the geniuses behind The Comebacks. Hey, you guys made a movie that was... I don't even know what it was. It was so effing bad. We got to put our minds together. Hey, my next creative endeavor, I got to get in business with you geniuses. You guys are geniuses. Go watch that movie just for fun and tell me if you can even... It's like, he's a horrible coach. He's the world's worst coach. There's he's eating a banana. He's working the pit crew of a NASCAR thing. He's eating a banana and he carelessly tosses the banana peel over his shoulder into pit lane, by the way.
What happens?
Bunch of grainy footage from Talladega circa 1986 with a bunch of cars piling up and crashing. It is
somebody slips on a banana peel.
A car slipped on a banana peel.
Yeah. It's going to be uncomfortable sitting next to him with the hammer.
Listen. Jesus Christ. where was I? Yes, Chris.
Hello?
What's happening, my friend?
Nothing. I first just want to say I missed you in San Diego. I was really looking forward to you coming back to 91X.
I have no idea. Speaking of geniuses, by the way, I have no idea who they have on in San Diego other than us. I spoke to the program director or the GM over there about 4 or 5 months ago. He said we would be coming on 91X in San Diego. I said, that's awesome, because Loveline was on 91X in San Diego for 11 years, and we were number one all 11 of those years. So what a nice fit. Adam Carolla comes back to 91X in San Diego after 11 years on Loveline. And then, of course, now with Dancing with the Stars and many other things happening, well, that would be a little bit of a coup. A person that has some national notoriety coming back to the station where he reigned at number one in the evenings for 11 years. And then he called me a month later and he said, yeah, we're going with a local guy. And I said, really? And they said, yeah, we want someone local. And I said, well, I wasn't local and on your station for 11 years.
Keep it down, Adam. I'm trying to watch the comebacks.
We were number one, and they said, well, sorry, Ace Man, we're going with a local guy. And then about 10 seconds later, I got the Dancing with the Stars thing. And the only reason I bring that up is because that is considered a pot of gold if you're a radio show programmer or you're a GM or what have you, because it's just the guy from your station on a national stage, which then might get more ears and eyeballs to your website, so on and so forth. It just couldn't hurt, I guess, is the heading it falls under. But there you go. They went with the local guy. God bless him. And I'm sure history will be very kind to that decision. But go ahead, Eric.
January 2nd, didn't hear you, didn't tune back in, and now I just driving around with my headphones listening to the podcast from the day before.
Oh, well, thank you, Chris. And Chris, though, do me a favor and be fair. Check it out, listen to it, and then tell me how good the person is. I know they're not going to be better than me just because I'm a pompous ass, but they might still do a decent show. So check it out and report back to us.
I will. But my question was, I want you to explain why, and I hope you agree with me, why rear-wheel drive is better than front-wheel drive. I tried to explain to my wife, but she didn't listen, so I figured a genius like you could do a better job than me.
All right, I'll tell you a couple of reasons. First off, there's always this argument, it just is. Secondly, here's why I like rear wheel drive better than front wheel drive. You steer with the front wheels. I don't like the dual job of steering and pulling simultaneously. It makes the steering wheel want to do something other. Well, your front wheels, instead of just steering, are actually propelling the car and steering. Thus, you can feel it in the wheel because it's doing some work while it's steering. It's like, it's like when you're taking a crap and talking on the phone. You're sort of half into both of them. You're never quite as effective as you would be if you were just on the pod alone or just on the phone alone. You're always worried a little about hearing that plop sound.
Still, crap's coming out both ends.
Coming out both ends. Very good point. But it's not nearly as effective as if you're either just standing talking on the phone or just plain pooping, number one. But here's the other thing that makes front-wheel drive crappy. When you launch your car from a standing start, so you're at a stoplight, and some guy pulls up next to you, and he throws a few revs at you, and he's a Japanese kid in a squatted Acura, and you say, you want to go, son? And you rev up your car, and you drop the clutch. The weight of your car, and this happens, you know what? Do not buy just a front-wheel drive SUV. You know how SUVs will come in all-wheel drive and front-wheel drive? Go ahead and spend the extra $4,000 and get the all-wheel drive, because the front-wheel drive, here's what happens. Car sits sort of high off the ground. Light changes from red to green. You accelerate. As you accelerate, the weight of the car lurches backwards. So the front end sort of lifts up. If you picture a minivan, a car, an SUV sitting still and then taking off, you'll see the suspension compress in the rear and sort of lift in the front. Well, you want the tire spinning in the direction that the inertia is going, in the direction that the weight is going. Let's put it this way. Ask your wife this. Is there such a thing as a front-wheel drive dragster or funny car? Has anyone ever invented a front wheel?
Ask your wife that.
Ask your wife that. Well, she'll go, well, TV Tommy Ivo in the 70s had four blown big block olds in an all-wheel drive funny car. And then, of course, there was the Chi-Town Hustler, the Texan Billy McEwen. Those guys all came out of the 70s. I do believe Shirley Cha-Cha Muldowney did. She drove a front-wheel drive car in her personal life. Unclear. No, that's right. She blew it. She had a 426 Dodge Hemi that blown.
Took the words right out of my mouth.
All right. Here's my point. Weight shifts back. Weight shifts off the front wheels, shifts onto the rear wheels, and that's what you want digging in. So I personally do not like a front wheel drive car unless it's a very small little car. And I'll tell you a car that works nicely in front wheel drive. The Mini Cooper. The new Mini. That's a front wheel drive car that works very nicely.
Because it's short.
It's light. Short wheelbase, and they just figured out the math. Let's
we'll be
see.
Right back.
We need to take ourselves a break. Need a nickname. Someone wants more Mr. Burcham. Real writers, real breaks. No good comedies anymore. All right. I'll talk to you.
I've
we
got
have
a funny
your
thing.
Questions.
I've got a funny thing. My concern about your Dancing with the Stars that was brought up to me. You'll appreciate
really?
It.
Really? All right. Yeah. Bald Brian with a Dancing with the Stars bomb to drop. We'll talk to you next.
It's the Adam Carolla Show, and here's a word from our program director, Jack Silver.
Cowboy up, beeps! Today, Survivor host Jeff Probst. Comedian Dana Gould helps us break down a Huell Howser episode. The Ace Man rants and what can Adam complain about? And the guy who's effing Ben Affleck, Jimmy Kimmel. Ooh, he's effing Ben Affleck. What's the big deal? Jackman spent the latter half of the 70s effing Roberta Flack. Where's my song? And Killing Me Softly doesn't count. There was nothing soft about it. Wait.
Thank you, Jack. 866-901-ADAM. This is the Adam Carolla Show.
That's right. Before the Fugees did it in the 90s, Roberta Flack did it in the 70s. So, Bald Brian, revelation with the girlfriend and Dancing with the Stars.
So, we're watching ABC, and on comes promo after promo for Dancing with the Stars. And we're watching. She says, I'm very worried for Adam. I'm very nervous. I said, why? He's going to do fine. He's, you know, an athlete, this and that. He's a boxer. He's like, no. He cannot talk about the Jews in 9/11. He cannot go on his rant about it. I'm like, I'm pretty sure that was a joke. I don't think he's actually going to do it. It's like, no, people, this is middle America. People will not stand for that. I'm like, even if he does, I think he has. I think people understand it's a joke. Oh, no. He can't. She was very concerned. So don't do it.
Yeah. Well, when Bergeron was on the show earlier this week, I told him 8 to 12 minutes is all I need.
Right.
And by the way, just hear me out. I'm not pointing fingers. I'm just pointing out facts.
It's not a conspiracy if that's what went down. Sure. It's the truth.
Right. And history will judge me that
way.
See,
this is the... Oh, you're joking.
No Jews in the building. They all stayed home that day. I could go on and on, but if you want to hear it, you tune in to ABC Prime Time on Monday the 17th.
Well, now, this does spark an interesting debate, because remember when Mark Cuban went on... Of course, you didn't watch religiously then as I did.
No.
He did the thing where he mouthed all the words to the song, and finally Carrie Ann and ABBA had to tell him, no, we don't. When you dance, you just feel the music. You don't actually have to mouth the words.
Uh-huh.
Was he mouthing right, left, right, left?
No, he was mouthing the lyrics. Embarrassing. But that would have been embarrassing, too. And he actually ended up doing all right, Mark Cuban. But you once mentioned that you went scuba diving. Mm-hmm. I couldn't handle it because that was too long without talking.
I inhaled too many fish. Yeah.
How are you going to go a minute and a half?
It's not going to be easy. It's also, you get used to your partner saying, step, quick, quick, slow, quick, click. Quick, quick, slow, yeah. Turn, shazay. And then they go one and two and now and turn and kick and back and here. And you know, you get used to these commands right. As you're sort of passing through it. And when they shut up, I'm not so sure I'm going to know what to do.
Because it'll be in your head by then.
Well, one would hope. And then plus, I don't know if there's much back and forth, you know. You know, I don't know if you can toss in an and or a here we go or what have you.
I don't know.
Have you seen the promo pictures they've released of you? Apparently you're dancing on the sun because there's a supernova behind you.
Oh, that's a nice photo.
I'm dancing into a volcano. And there's something,
this will be on AdamCarolla.com.
Something looks
soon,
marginally right? off about me in that picture. I can't quite put my finger on it.
Retouched
a
high hair.
Very airbrushed,
I look like I don't want to be there
or
something.
But there's a supernova behind it.
Yeah.
It's all yellow and white.
He looks sort of graceful, though, in that photo.
Yeah.
The posture's good.
It's going to be an explosion. Of dance come the 17th. All right, what were we talking about? Let's see. Let's talk to Susie. Susie?
Good morning.
What's happening, Susie?
I'm just up in Portland on my way to work.
Good times.
Listening to the talk about the movies and, you know, the comedies. It's such a high hopes expectation at this point of when something new comes out that's actually going to be funny.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that Superbad finally saved a little bit of hope, but...
Well, let me say this about Superbad. Okay. Superbad, okay. And, well, I thought Knocked Up was quite a bit better than Superbad, but Superbad was good and had a lot of likable characters.
Right.
And everyone who reviewed the movie said the same thing, which was, oh, this is a great movie, this is a funny movie. The cops seem like they're from another movie and seem out of place, but other than the cops that were played by Seth Rogen and another guy, other than the cops... this was an awesome movie, but my argument was the cops were in about a third of the movie, and the cops were from another movie, and a total distraction, and I'm not exactly sure what they were doing in that movie, so can't be a great comedy, must be downgraded. Like, you don't go, Manhattan was a great movie, except for these two characters that were in it quite a bit that were from another movie and not very good and kind of distracting. Other than that, yeah. Manhattan was a great Woody Allen comedy.
Yeah, as long as you like Woody Allen.
Right, I'm just saying I'm downgrading Superbad from great to good because... miscast, and not only miscast in terms of the personnel, but out of another movie, cops in the whole movie kept popping up doing stupid things like, hey, let's go burn our car out in the parking lot.
That's hilarious. And the thing that...
It may be funny in and of itself, but it had nothing to do with this teen comedy, and it was a distraction, and most people that reviewed it agreed that the cops seemed distracting and like they were from a different movie.
See, the thing about Knocked Up, and this is my problem with most comedies, is there's always this underlying soft story now. You know, it's like, oh, I'm really in love with this girl. I mean, I love Adam Sandler movies. I really do. But it's all the same thing, you know?
Yeah.
The theme of a girl and how can I get it, whether it was in the 80s and or in Hawaii, whatever. So the reality that you bring in some pregnant chick, you know, in this day and like it's a big deal, that to me draws away from the comedy. And so that's why I would vote for Superbad over Knocked Up.
All right, well, I'm labeling you super retarded because Knocked Up was better. But Knocked Up still had about 5 or 8 scenes that they could have gotten rid of. It was too long. It was too fat. It wasn't lean and mean.
You'd call it flawed.
But a very, very funny movie.
Sure. Yeah, it had a few very funny scenes. The bouncer was really funny. The guy from Office Space who kicks his sister out because she's too old. That was a good scene, but I thought overall...
But then that scene just... Was there two of those scenes or one? Because that scene kept going and going and going.
I think they went back to the same club a couple of times.
Oh, when they went back to the same... Like, that's one that... The movie was like 2 hours and 18, you know, over 2 hours. It could have been an hour and 50 minutes.
The only laugh I got in that whole movie was when the bouncer just said to her, you're old as S.
And that was a female on the with the biological clock ticking identification laugh rather than this is a hilarious
scene.
Other
than that, I felt like I was missing something. Knocked Up did not make me laugh at all. And the only thing I appreciated about the movie was that it did seem to have some sort of heart.
Yes.
Seth Rogen's character had a relationship with his father that was believable. And the relationship between Seth Rogen and Katherine Heigl was ridiculous.
Yeah, look, he's a likable guy and she's very likable and they're good comedic actors.
True.
And basically, here's where we're at in terms of Hollywood.
Dude, I waited for you, man.
We are so hard up for decent comedies that when a Knocked Up comes along or the aforementioned Napoleon Dynamite comes along, we raise it up like it's the kid from The Lion King.
Yeah.
And all the clouds part and a shaft of light comes down because
Jonathan Taylor Thomas.
We're swimming in a sea of good luck chucks and bench warmers. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, wait a minute. Barry?
Yes, sir.
Barry from Baltimore?
Good morning, Adam.
Great.
Good morning, Teresa.
Great to speak
Hi,
to you,
Barry.
What's happening?
I just wanted to tell you how awesome your show is.
Thanks, and, Barry.
You know, if there's something to complain about, it's that it's too good, because now I'm like a month behind on the podcast.
Yeah, Jack Silver, our program director, came in here and told us to dial down the good a little bit yesterday, as a matter of fact. So we started this morning. By the way, Barry... I don't feel like there'll ever be another human being named Barry. I don't think my kid is going to go to, you know, first grade or kindergarten with any Barrys. I don't think there's going to be any more Barrys. I think it's you and Manilow and Bostic, and that's it.
Well, you know, I found that if your name is Barry, you're one of four things. You're either Jewish,
mm-hmm.
you're black,
mm.
you're English, mm-hmm. or you're gay.
Mm. Ah, or you could any combination of those.
Barry's 3.5 out of 4, by the way, on that one.
Well, the Jewish part's right.
Ah, I had you as black, English, bi.
Right.
And Jewish.
He's gay.
So, Barry, what are you doing today?
I'm actually headed into work, so, you know, it's about 9:30 now, and
mm-hmm.
I'm sitting in my car lot.
That's a good gig, where you head into work at 9:30, and you get to sort of hang out in your car for a while before you meander in. What do you do for a living?
I'm a professor.
Nice.
What do you teach?
I teach micro. Actually, Teresa, I emailed you about your brother.
Oh, that was so nice. This is when my brother was at Johns Hopkins, which is mm-hmm. in Baltimore. This nice guy emailed if I need any help, or actually, I think he might have offered just to drop by and visit.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Barry.
That was sweet.
Appreciate it. And Johns Hopkins is in the Maryland area in Baltimore.
Yeah.
Hey, someone's got a question, interesting question about Howard Stern coming back to terrestrial radio. John?
Hey, Adam.
What's happening?
What would you do if he came back to terrestrial radio in 2011?
Is that when his contract's up?
Yeah. Yeah. Duh. Like you don't know?
Uh-oh.
Oh.
Like I don't know.
When a 47-year-old yeah. man pulls out the duh card.
You dropped a duh on me, John? Yes, I have a
duh.
Calendar. I have a calendar that goes ahead 12 years.
Trembling and, hand making X's over each day.
And 2 years, dummy.
Oh, he pulled out dummy and duh?
So
2008, that's three.
I made a statement. I said I had a calendar that went ahead 12 years. There's other events, by the way. There's when the Grease Man makes a comeback. There's when Art LeBeau comes back.
Where's
that's
floor
a 2021. I have a calendar that goes ahead 12 years.
What's your move when Howard comes back to terrestrial radio in 2011?
What would my move be?
Yeah, your chess move.
I don't play chess. I don't know how to play chess. I can play checkers.
Oh, you're not gay? Oh, I thought you were gay.
Well, John,
John's delightful.
You're ball
this is damn exciting stuff.
John, I'm guessing you're a Howard Stern fan?
Yes, sir, I am.
All right, so then you should get yourself some Sirius satellite radio, right?
No, I got both, stupid.
You got Sirius and XM?
I like dummy. It's more Stanford.
Yeah, I missed too.
Duh.
Well, now, when you say both,
what
you mean Sirius.
I'm just saying, what if Howard Stern returns to terrestrial radio?
You're asking because you'll be torn.
And then
what's your move?
Then there'll be a competition between the two of us?
I don't know. I'm just a listener, dummy.
Yeah, I've never given it any thought, John.
I like radio.
All right.
Adam.
Listen, well, is there any way you could listen to both? You know, you could podcast.
You can listen to anything you want. It's America.
Adam, this is radio.
I'm trying to help you. Hey, John, just out of curiosity, what do you do?
Works with kids. It works with the elderly.
With autistic.
Send your beeswax, whore.
Wait, you hold up. Beeswax, duh, dummy, and whore.
All right, John, I'm going to let you go because I don't mind you insulting me, but when you insult coworkers, unless
you
you'd like...
to protect your bitch.
And, well, actually, Paul Bryan is my bitch.
Oh, come on!
All right, John.
I'm sorry.
Good times, everybody.
John, I'm glad you could find time out of your schedule, which I'm sure is very busy.
All right.
I apologize.
It takes a big a-hole to apologize. Yeah, I don't... I punched it up because I thought it was an interesting question. Stern has a 5-year contract. So I guess that means Stern comes back in 3 years. Is that what he was saying?
I had no idea.
And I don't know how the comeback part works. I would assume that he'll stay where he is. I don't know.
Are things going well over there? They don't really have ratings. How can they tell? Subscriptions?
I have no idea how the whole satellite radio thing works. The XM and the FM were going to merge, but then that would have made them a monopoly.
Yeah.
And the FAA or the FDA or the FUA or whoever got involved. There's no money over there.
Right,
that much I know.
I'm just a dumb whore. But
right.
From what I hear,
mm-hmm.
A lot of people, when they get XM or Sirius, they get it with their car for a year or they get it for a year and they don't renew. They enjoy it, but they don't renew it.
Well, the thing about that technology, and I'm sure we should probably limit ourselves to 25 minutes of FM or XM or Sirius talk just because why do a commercial for them? Here's what it appears to be. A good idea that everyone agrees on in principle, something that people seem to enjoy once they're given it, as you just mentioned, but somehow didn't take, like some sort of restaurant that you go to and you go, wow, this is good food. And then you go, wow, these are reasonable prices.
Yeah,
and then you go
back.
Geez, it's right in the neighborhood. I should go back. And then 2 years later, you realize I just drove past it for the past 2 years. And then you go there again and you bring some friends and they sit down and you go, oh, this is good food at a reasonable price. I ought to frequent this place. And then for some reason, you don't go back again. It seems to me like a good idea that when people get a sampling of it out front of the Hickory Farms, they go, oh, this is a delightful summer sausage, and yet they don't walk in and buy the sausage.
When it's given to them for free, they enjoy it, but it seems that most people still aren't willing to pay for it.
Duh.
Yeah, and I don't know. I mean, maybe we're 20 years away, maybe we're 5 years away. I don't know what it is. I don't know why it hasn't caught on, but if you look back and you think about it, and you picture seeing some of those old commercials. Remember when the people would fall from the sky, when Snoop Dogg would fall from the sky, and when B.B. King would fall from the sky, David Bowie and things like that. Those commercials weren't from 04. Those commercials were from 98, 99. I mean, we are 10 years in to this experiment. I have no idea financially how it works. It has been 10 years of no profit and no return, and I don't know how they keep it afloat. I don't know how they keep the satellite running. I don't know how they keep the... If you go into Manhattan and go to the 50th floor of a very expensive commercial office building, you'll see high technology everywhere, the most impressive studios you've ever seen. I don't know where the money comes from. I don't know how it works. I once spoke to Stern. And by the way, sorry, Howard. Howard gets PO'd when I call him Stern, but that's what I always call him. But when I pick up the phone and I talk to him, I call him Howard. It's just I feel like when I'm talking about him on the air, I feel like it's blowhardy to go, I talked to Howard. Howard told me the other day.
He doesn't like you to call him Stern?
There was an issue, evidently, with me calling him Stern
too
on the air.
Too familiar or something?
Too informal. Like, we're...
okay.
I mean, too formal.
Got it.
We're friends. calling him Stern. Like if you were angry at somebody and you'd go, Miss Strasser, instead of calling Teresa. You see what I'm saying? I call Stern on the air because I don't want it to be like when people do that obnoxious thing where they go, so then Bobby told me, and they're talking about Robert De Niro.
Right.
You know what I mean?
That's a heavy name to drop.
I just feel like if I talk to Howard off the air, I don't like to say Howard this and Howard that. It makes it seem like, I don't know, we're buddies and you're not, or
the
something.
Same thing with Kimmel.
I do the same thing with Kimmel. Yeah. Yes, I do. I say Kimmel and Stern so people know who I'm talking about, and you professionally. I'm friends with these guys, but you're not. So you'll know what I'm talking about when I said Kimmel was on the air or Stern was on the air. I said to Stern a couple of months ago, I said, hey, Howard, what markets are great for you guys in your radio? I mean, do you guys sell more subscriptions in New York than you do in Kentucky, for instance?
Right.
Where are the big markets? So if I have a movie coming out and I want to go on your radio station and talk about it, are you guys big in Chicago? Should we put the movie in Chicago? And he said, they don't know.
Or they he said,
I don't know. And I said, oh, how does that work? And he said, I was curious too.
Yeah.
So I don't know how the model works. I don't know if he'll come back. I don't see how they could pay him what he's being paid 3 years from now or whenever his contract is up. And maybe he will come back to terrestrial radio. All right. Well, we'll have long been fired by then, though.
I know.
Look, we're going to be on the air. We're going
to
be here in 2012. Mm. We need to take ourselves a break. When we come back, I would like you guys to help me on a little something called Do Yourself a Favor. Tips I've given to you in the past. Little things like put a label on your phone so you know what cradle it goes into. Say upstairs or downstairs or kitchen or bedroom so they don't get swapped around. Put a little piece of Velcro on the back of your cell phone so it doesn't slide out of your sweatpants. By the way, I was doing an interview with a rider from the Los Angeles Times. Gave him a ride back to his car after we were at a location. Got out of the car, dropped him off, went to my house, looked in the passenger seat of my car.
Phone.
Cell phone and camera. Super slick, metallic. You know how slick cameras are these days and how slick so? Both sitting on my seat. Both. Came right out of his pocket and a little piece of his foreskin. Point is this. I will give you tips and a little something called Do Yourself a Favor. And if you have any good ones, give us a buzz. We'll pass them along. We'll do it next.
Welcome back to the Adam Carolla Show. Whether it's finances, relationships, or pizza toppings, no one has better advice than Adam. So it's time to listen to the Ace Man and do yourself a favor on the Adam Carolla Show.
Well, first some oldies but goodies. Can Affix-A-Flat in the back of your car.
Yeah, I got that.
Spray can so you don't have to change your flat unless you get a blowout, get hit by the side of the road. Hey, here's one I like. I keep a little flannel, little rag, and I keep it right in my little console thing in between the two seats there. Clean the sunglasses off. I don't like it when my sunglasses get all filled with sebum or schmutz or whatever the hell.
Sure, they make microfiber things you can actually get specifically for that. Leave it in your little console.
Yeah, if you want to really go whole hog, next time you're in the mall and you pass the little sunglass hut, they'll make a little thing size of a cigarette lighter or two things of chapstick, a little you know, and you put it in there and you put the little microfiber thing in there. And let's just say you've been out all day or you've been playing softball or you've been doing whatever and you get back in your car and you put your sunglasses on. You've been wearing them up on your hair and whatever you got in your hair's like all. Oh, sorry, Bald Brian.
Damn it.
Whatever you got up there is up there. You clean them off. I don't know why, but it makes a big difference.
You know what else works great for that is the little handy wipes you get from the rib joints.
Mm-hmm.
If you're in a pinch, you can't get the spray and the wipe.
A little moisture.
That's it.
Also, one I like, toss your phone number on your wallet, on your cell phone, on your whatever. Yes, Bald Brian.
Another P-Touch.
Because people do this. People say,
That's right. Yeah,
who's going to return a wallet? Well, look at it this way. A thief steals your wallet, but a citizen finds your wallet.
Right.
Thieves don't walk around going, well, I'm going to go out on a searching crime spree today where I'm just going to go out and look around the sidewalk and the bus stops and see if I can find stuff that fell out of people's pockets, they go commit crimes.
Right.
You'll know it when they get your wallet.
I had an awkward moment when I lost my cell phone. I didn't do what you said and put my phone number on it. Sometimes my friends steal each other's phones to write in. You know, when you turn your phone on, it can sometimes have a message or a little picture.
I do that to Angie all the time.
It's very fun. And I usually go into people's phones and change my name. So when I call, it pops up, sweet piece of ass.
Mm-hmm.
That's fun. But my friend stole my phone and she put a little rose, you know, a little rose picture on it, and then wrote,
You're old as S.
No. She wrote, that would have been funny, too. She wrote, I swear, she wrote, I love fisting.
Oh,
then
Teresa.
I lost my phone. I lost my phone, and I realized when some stranger finds this phone to try to figure out whose it is, that's what they're going to get. I couldn't be more embarrassed.
Well,
yes, hello. Is this,
I love... all right, here's one in a newer one. Separate TiVos. If you live with your partner, go ahead and drop another $80 and get a separate TiVo. No more of those arguments of what should we watch, what do you want to watch. They want to watch the Housewives of Orange County. You want to watch the UFC fight. Get separate TiVos. I know it sounds like eventually you're just going to be living in separate houses, but you don't realize how many arguments are surrounding the television set and the programming. Have your space. Let your lady have her space. And here's the way I personally do it, and you guys probably ought to do it too. A lot of people have two TV sets, a TV in the den, sort of the family watching room, and then oftentimes a TV in the bedroom area. Make that one the ladies. The lady will happily watch her Oprahs and her Views and her whatever she's watching, and you can go watch your shows. Now, you can go watch your shows together as well. It's just when push comes to shove, they'll have their shows, and you'll have your shows, and your shows won't get knocked off by their shows, and it won't be one of those, these two shows are on at exactly the same time, and we're going to arm wrestle over who TiVos it. Two TiVos, save a marriage.
I like that.
This one, Bald Brian and I just, stumbled across the other day. A lot of protein bars. A lot of those sort of breakfast / protein bars. They're tough.
The better they are for you, the harder they are to eat.
Yes. I mean, you really, lose a set of chompers trying to break one off, trying to break a bite off, and then you'll chew it like, cattle pulling up cud for the next 2 days. I told Bald Brian, pop it out of the wrapper because it's got some foil on it, and pop it in the microwave for 5 seconds. Just hit it.
Yeah.
Just knock it. Just soften it up. Just loosen it up just a little bit. Yes, Bored Op Bill.
I actually got another tip for that. Also, you can also just put it in your front pocket. Your
warms
chest
it up.
Will warm it up after like 10, 15 minutes.
All right. Especially if when it's been slamming against your boyfriend's back for an hour and a half.
Depending on the bar, you can also refrigerate to make it taste a little bit better.
Yes.
I do that sometimes.
If it's a good bar, if you get a tough bar cold, you can't break it. You can't break it off. I swear I've pulled teeth out trying to get a bite out of one of these things. There's a lot of stuff where you don't, not everything that goes into the microwave needs to be lasagna. There's things that shouldn't be in the microwave that you can just hit for a heartbeat, like ice cream that's rock hard.
Yeah.
Just hit it for like 11 seconds. Just hit it.
What about
soften
fruit?
It up.
Like two cold cherries.
I've said this one kabillion times. I never feel like I get traction in this one. Cold kills flavor. How many times have you taken home food from the night before? You went to an Italian place. You got the linguine and clam sauce and what have you. It was delectable. You didn't finish it. You brought it home. You pulled it out of the fridge the next morning. You're going to pop it in the microwave, but you thought you'd get a little taste in. Tastes like cold congealed fat. Tastes like nothing. Why cold? Now, my favorite topic, fecal matter. Take some doggy doo-doo, put it out on the lawn on a hot August day, smells to high heaven. Freeze it, you'd eat it like an Otter Pop. It kills it. What I mean
you
is
your phone out because I know what message.
Well, what I'm saying is, I know, but anything to prove a point, what I'm saying is cold kills scent.
Yeah, it does.
Scent, half a flavor is scent. So when you take fruit or you take whatever and you freeze it, not freeze it, but you put it in the fridge, it knocks down the taste. Yes, I agree. If you have a peach, if you have an orange, if you have some cherries, don't warm it up so that it's hot, but get it from 44 degrees just up to 65 degrees. Just get it to room temperature. Throw it in the microwave for 8 seconds.
Now I see why you've trained Molly to do her business in the freezer. This makes perfect sense.
That's right. Little Mrs. Stofers. We'll take ourselves a break. Sorry, I had 1,000 of these things. I just ran out of time, so we'll do some more of them coming up next week. T, the news, tease it.
What's the gayest song ever?
Mmm. Yeah?
That's no. not it. Something is way gayer than that.
Coward of the County? Insider from sequel. Yesterday. Quick break, back to the news next.
Let everybody know exactly what's in store for us.
The host of Survivor, Jeff Probst.
This is going to be a day in the life. It starts a little earlier than I wish it did.
Jimmy Kimmel.
It's not gay when two men are really in love.
A spirited round of what can't Adam complain about.
Can't complain about freedom of speech.
It's now official that I've heard more people I wish would have been silenced by the government than pro whatever I'm interested in.
And Dana Gould joins Adam in the studio to double team Huell Hauser.
If he was in New York on 9/11, he'd be like, this is, the buildings were there and now they're not.
Teresa Strasser delivers the news.
I'm depressed and I checked into the mental hospital for whoring.
Powered by MSN.com. Have you been to MSN today? And we'll talk to you at 866-901-ADAM.
And there is a lot of love.
Live coast to coast and streaming the world at AdamCarolla.com. Just click on listen live.
There is a lot of love here
on the Adam Carolla Show.
Always look forward to Dana Gould coming in doing his Huell. Hey, T-Bone.
Yes.
What's in the news, baby girl?
Teresa Strasser with tomorrow's news today.
This story brought to you by our content partners at MSN.com. Police continue to search for a suspect who set off a small explosive device in Times Square this morning. The incident happened around 3:40 a.m. Eastern at the military recruiting station. There are no reports of any injuries thus far. There is shattered glass from the front door of the recruitment station. Police have the area completely shut down as the investigation continues. Subway trains are being turned back and are not allowed to enter the area at this time. Mayor Bloomberg.
There's nothing going on over there. A guy threw an M80 at the window of the recruiting station as he zipped by on his Huffy. That's what happened. They've closed the whole city down.
Here's what Mayor Bloomberg had to say early this morning at a press conference.
At approximately 3:45 this morning, there was a small explosion outside of the military recruiting station right behind me here in Times Square, the crossroads of the world. There were no injuries, thank goodness, and police are now conducting a thorough investigation into the incident.
See, this is what's happened ever since 9/11. Every Hesher throws an M80 to a recruiting center. We have to shut down the entire city. And then I was watching CNN this morning. They always have to interview people who heard the blast.
Right.
Except for no one sees anything, but they always talk to a bunch of slack-jawed guys who are like, yeah, well, I was working and I heard a...
Dude,
I heard an exploding sound, so I went outside. Awesome. Are you telling me there was a noise that accompanied this explosion? This is incredible. And they go, let's talk to another person. Well, I was working, and I heard an exploding sound. All righty, then. There should be a law, new law. If the person who is at the scene knows nothing and can add zero, you can't interview them. You know what I mean? Where they go, hey, we talked to one of the neighbors after the man went on a homicidal maniac, you know, the homicidal maniac killing spree. And they talked to the neighbor and was like, I didn't know the man well, but it didn't seem like this is something he was going to do. Then we don't need to talk to you.
Could you describe your relationship with the suspect?
You know, we never did speak.
Did you look at him?
I only saw the top of his head once when I was on an A-frame ladder cleaning out my gutters.
Did anyone you know him?
No. I don't even know anyone I know. As a matter of fact, I don't know people I know.
Did he remind you of anyone?
Never saw this coming. Never heard of the man. As a matter of fact, who are you and what are you doing on my lawn? Right. You know, they always feel compelled to talk to someone who is nearby but knows nothing.
I should say that the latest reports out of New York say that traffic is returning to normal in the Times Square area after the explosion and that the subways are running.
Yes, the proximity thing, not interested. Like, if you're in your house and you're watching TV and something happens in your neighbor's house and you don't hear a thing and you don't see a thing and you don't know a thing, I don't need to hear your take on the proceedings. I was just watching TV. I didn't hear anything. I just came out. Well, the first thing I heard actually is when your news van pulled up. Ew, hold on. Where's my steno pad? This is going to be very powerful in court. Yeah, had five guys come down, CNN talked to every single one of them. They're like, we heard a pow. So we came outside. And by the way, if you hear something blowing up, stay inside. That's my policy. Go ahead, T.
In an effort to help celebrate the 30th anniversary of the world-renowned gay and lesbian Mardi Gras in Sydney, Australia, the gay website SameSame.com put together a list of the top 50 gayest songs of all time.
I know number one.
You do know it.
Yeah.
Well, we'll get to that. All right. See if you have it correct.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start with, I'll give you a few.
Right.
Here is number 10, Alicia Bridges.
I like the nightlife. I like the boogie.
It. Yeah.
Does she say on the disco floor?
I never
hour?
Knew what she was saying on the disco.
On the disco round?
On the disco hour?
It sounds like she says hour. She goes, I like the one on the disco hour.
Like, I've never known what she's
let's
saying.
Let's see if we can figure it out. We've been through. Please don't. Now, does she say on the disco floor or the disco hour?
I love the nightlife. I like the boogie. On the disco hour.
What is that part where you don't finish your sentence?
Is it just a woo? Like, on the disco?
Yeah, but then she doesn't finish disco right. Like, she should go, I like the nightlife, I like the boogie, at the disco. Ow! You know, she doesn't do that. She goes, I like the boogie at the disco. Arr! What the hell's she saying, Paul Bryan?
Looking it up right now.
Thank God for this worldwide ultranet.
It's the internet.
Huh? Don't ever crack me on the air.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, the gay guys love disco.
I've danced to this in many a gay club in my life. It's a good song.
Saw you there.
Also at number 9.
Oh, I was right. The disco round, according to
disco round?
This lyrics on demand.
What's a disco round?
On the disco round?
If you saw Saturday Night Fever, you know the disco floor is square.
All right. On the
disco round.
You just said round and made it round in your head.
On the
printed
lyrics, it's apostrophe round, like disco around.
Like round midnight?
Oh, listen. All right, that's enough.
I didn't publish this website.
Okay.
How about number 9?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
The ninth gayest song.
Vogue.
Yeah.
Madonna. As Larry King would call.
Madonna makes the list.
How's
a
your daughter
times.
Lords doing?
Yeah, the hook or the chorus would have been nice.
Strike pose. Sure. Yeah, it's 20 minutes before we get into into this.
You get the idea. How
wow.
About the,
you know, I'll tell you, it's a sad revelation. I know all the gay songs in the first millisecond.
Oh, that'll be
playing.
Fun. Let's see if you know the fourth gayest song of all time.
Raining Men?
Yeah. That's right.
Sad.
Yes.
Well, you know, the ultimate gay song is the one you rape your boyfriend to.
So that's any song that happens to be playing?
That's right. That's right. It's like when those bank commercials go, our number one customer is you. That's the way I feel about gay songs. Whatever is playing. I don't care if Molly Hatchet is playing. When you're giving it to your boyfriend, for that moment, that is the gayest song.
What if it's Kenny Rogers? Coward of the County.
All right.
This counts.
Do you have your number one? Because I know the number one.
Okay, quickly. Number 3.
First I was alone. I was petrified.
First I was afraid.
I was, yeah, yeah.
Close.
Is this Donna Summer?
Gloria Gaynor.
Mm. Gaynor's right in the name.
Yeah.
It's true. All right, number two, you'll also be able to guess right away.
Will survive, yes. Oh, Village People. Yeah?
Yes.
Do you know the song?
Their songs all sound the same. YMCA?
That's right.
Yeah. Bill doing the dance behind you did not hurt.
Bill.
It's easy to guess. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, he just spelled out Hep C.
Oh, no.
That's, you do the C. You like
the
Hep
to the H and the, yeah. He has to use his leg to do the capital E.
That's not his leg.
Whoa. Oh, no. God. Damn. All right.
I had no idea this was a gay song when I was growing up. Mm-hmm. Young Men's Christian Association. I had no idea.
Yep.
That anything untoward went on there.
Who knew?
The number one gayest song. You guys have guesses.
I have Rambling Glory Hole Man by Katrina and the AIDS.
Oh, my God.
Katrina and the AIDS.
Yeah.
I hadn't.
You guys, you don't know that one?
No, I thought that group totally went away.
No, not a one-hit wonder. Still touring today. Katrina and the AIDS, Rambling Glory Hole Man. Not a dry ass in the house when that song. I'm up on the shoulders of my man with my Bic hoisted high above my head.
What about you,
you
bro?
Said Bic, right?
I said Bic, yeah.
Is it, it's not Macho Man, is it?
It can't be another. It's a cop-out to do.
It is, but that's the gay. That's a very gay song.
Do you think Macho Man is the gayest song?
Either that or I'm Too Sexy by Right Said
Who,
Fred.
You know what? I'm digging deep. Okay, I'm going to go a couple guesses. Cher? Can I get some Cher love here? How about some Cher?
Cher's on the list, but she's not at number one.
And then how about we go deep? How about we go into some like Ethel Merman or some like Judy Garland, you know, or Liza Minnelli?
Ding,
you know,
ding, ding goes the trolley.
How about we go old school? How about we go musical?
These are all pop songs.
All pop songs.
Wake Me Up Before You Go Go.
Mm.
It's a good guess.
All right.
I'm telling you, it's right there. It's right there.
All right, give it to us.
Gay walking.
Gay. Bill wants to.
No, that's not.
What do you got, T? Do you have it?
Yeah.
Oh, Dancing Queen. ABBA.
I thought it was gonna be Air Supply.
Air Supply didn't even make the top 50.
They made the bottom 50.
How dare you?
All gay lists should all be the bottom.
This is the bottom 50 gayest songs.
Right. Yeah, I like ABBA. What can you do? And boy, when you see some of that old footage, they were not only like 70'd out to the... I mean, people don't realize that they were like from Sweden. And there is 70s. Like, there's American 70s. And that's, you know, sideburns and long swept hair and platform shoes and bell bottoms. And then there's Sweden 70s.
They were the eye of the 70s storm.
They were like a super, like, Aryan, swinging 70s breed. Like white people pulled the 70s off. And they're the whitest of all the people. And they had, I mean... They just, like, bled 70s. When you saw their hair, when you saw their clothing, when you saw their vibe, I mean, it was like 70s. It was like 70s parody stuff. They're like extras from The Anchorman is what ABBA looked like in, like, 1976. Turn it up.
Phonetically, right? They didn't know what they were saying.
Probably.
I think they spoke some English. I think I've seen them interviewed, and they went on a few tours of the United States and all that kind of stuff.
Explain Fernando.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Oh.
All right.
There's a plot in that song.
Well, I'll get to this. Your dancing partner, Julianne Hough.
Oh.
She's only 19. She did an interview with Cosmo Girl magazine. She dropped a little bit of a bombshell.
Mm-hmm.
She would like you to know that she is a virgin.
Mm.
She plans to remain so until she's married. She says, quote...
I got news for you.
Yeah.
That interview was done 3 weeks ago.
Oh, times have changed.
A lot has changed in that time. A lot.
She says, quote, I want to be with that special person. Mm-hmm. I think the choice to have sex before marriage is an individual one, and waiting to have sex will strengthen that relationship. I'm not trying to preach consequences here, but I think when you say no down the line, it will be a better decision.
I told her I beat her on a technicality because I am married. Thus, we can have sex.
Oh, I see.
You say, really? You wanted to
wait till marriage. One of you is married.
What do you think this ring symbolizes, baby? Now get naked.
Now, did you know she'd once been engaged?
No.
Yeah, to some dude from Dance War, a contestant, Zach Wilson.
Worst video game ever. Wow.
She broke it off last year after deciding she was too young.
Mm.
And then she went on to say, and this might be useful for her, for you to know about your partner.
Mm-hmm.
I tried to go out and mingle with people in the industry and date people,
sure.
But I felt so different than most of them. I don't drink, smoke, or do drugs. So those things immediately separate
strike
me.
Strike one, two, and three. Keep going.
And then she says, it's all very enticing, though.
Oh.
Doors open.
Bring her over the dark side. Well, let me say this about the young Julianne. As I'd noted to my wife last evening as I was watching a 15-minute spread on her on Entertainment Tonight.
I think it's a spread if it's in a magazine.
Well, what I mean is expose or
semantics.
What have you. Semantics. The point is Miss, I went to NYU for three semesters that did drugs and then was tossed out of my keister.
Funny, I got highest honors, but close.
Highest.
That's what I mean.
Point is this. I said, she is not only the dancing part of the couple, she's the star part of the couple. She's a far bigger star than I am. I'm the only one who's hooked up with a dancer who's not the star in the equation of the dancing
you
with
make
the
a
stars.
Good point.
They'll, if you watch those entertainment shows, they go, Julianne Hough and her partner up next. It's like, well, everyone else, it's the celebrity and their partner. My partner is a bigger celebrity than I am.
If I had to name, and I've watched all of the seasons, the professional dancers, I could probably name Julianne, of course, Maxim, who's not going to be on the show again, the one who got with Mario Lopez. I think her name is Katrina
in the AIDS.
Her name is everyone.
And then there's the girl who used to be the champion, Cheryl. But I can't remember her last name, Burke.
Point is,
this is amazing.
Your girl is just as famous as any of these celebrities.
I was watching her talk about her country album that just dropped.
Right.
I was watching her on her photo spread for Shape magazine. I mean, it's 20 minutes of her every night on these entertainment shows, and I don't get mentioned. So I've decided that, A, she's a bigger star than me.
Yeah.
But, B, this chick has a crazy work ethic. She's beautiful. She's drug-free. She can sing. She's 19. We may have a superstar on our hands here. I mean, we could have, I don't know who to compare her to, and it's tough because the Britney Spearses of the world go up and go down and all that kind of stuff.
Olivia Newton-John, maybe?
She's,
from like that era?
Yeah, from like 20, yeah. I mean, like 30 years ago. She's not, I mean, she's not 20 yet. She's very talented, very driven, very beautiful, and evidently can sing as well. So look out, world.
You going to try to grab on to those coattails?
I don't know if you want to call abduction grabbing on. But basically what my plan is as soon as we get tossed off of Dancing with the Stars, it's right into the unmarked primered van with no license plate. And I head to my compound in Plentywood, Montana. And
gagging with the stars.
Next time you see her, it's 30 years from now and 300 pounds ago. That's right.
No.
She will be morbidly obese. We'll have 28 kids. Great dancers, every one of them. And that'll be it.
I'm a celebrity. Get me out of here.
That will be her next show. And it'll be called a van.
Okay, last story. I'll make it a quick one. I just wanted to mention this. I don't know if you've heard about Patrick Swayze. He is being treated for pancreatic cancer.
I want to feel sorry for him.
Pain don't hurt.
And I do. But I've met Patrick Swayze once and only once, and me and your best friend Damashek and a couple of guys were eating dinner at my restaurant, and somebody looked out the window and said, there's Patrick Swayze. And we said, we have to come up and say something to him.
Right.
And we all walked up to him and we said, Mr. Swayze, we've seen every one of your movies. I mean, we could all, recite the dialogue to, you know, Red Dawn and all those other movies, and we just said...
We said
we're all big fans, and I can't remember if he was smoking a cigarette or not, but he sort of looked up at us, and he said, all right. And then he looked back down again, and we all gave him one Mississippi, and we looked up and looked down again, and then we all went, all right, well, I guess we better go back into the restaurant. And that's what we did.
Maybe you caught him on a bad day.
He wasn't talking on a cell phone or making out with a chick. He was just standing there. So we all thought, all right.
Well, he's 55 years old. Last month, he began filming a role as a gay cheerleading instructor in an upcoming comedy called Fired Up. The National Enquirer first broke the story of Patrick's cancer, but they said it had spread to other organs. And Patrick's personal physician is saying the opposite, that he has a very limited amount of disease and that he appears to be responding well,
good.
To treatment.
I know he has that hot blonde doctor from that small town. She is a babe.
Kelly Lynn. Oh, that was on... Okay, quick thing. That was on TV last night. I watched it specifically as I'm like, Patrick Swayze is going to come up.
Roadhouse.
Right? I got to get the drops. The other blonde was 10 times hotter. The henchman's blonde made dance, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Far hotter than Kelly Lynch.
Who wanted to get naked up on the table.
Yes.
And they're like, get off that table. Yeah.
All right.
I'm Teresa Strasser, and that's the news sponsored by MSN.com. Have you been to MSN today?
Tomorrow's news. Today. Teresa Strasser.
All right, so Swayze is going to be okay, according to his doctor.
Well, there's a dispute. Pancreatic cancer has a very low survival rate.
Right.
That much I know.
Right.
The National Enquirer is saying that it's spread.
Right.
In which case, his prognosis could be very bad. They're saying he could have 5 weeks to live.
But why would his doctor then lie?
Better turn to something else.
He wants it to turn to something else. Mm. The doctor says all the reports stating the time frame of his prognosis and his physical side effects are absolutely untrue. The doctor is saying he's continuing his normal schedule during this time.
All right. Well, we wish him well. And another man we wish well, and we'll do it in person, Jeff Probst, Survivor.
Yeah.
Not wearing his customary choker this morning.
He's got his dimples on.
No, yes, he does. He's got them hungry eyes, too.
Nice song.
Take a quick, this could be the gayest song. Quick break.
How dare you?
Back with Jeff Probst next.
Right now on the Adam Carolla Show, the host of Survivor. By day 10, the situation was grim for the fans.
Everyone's freezing, everyone's cold.
Having won no reward challenges, they were hungry and weak. And their inability to build a shelter made a bad situation worse. Jeff Probst on the Adam Carolla Show.
That's right. Survivor, best show on television. Thursday nights. Tonight, CBS, 8 o'clock, 16th season.
Tonight is our Emmy Award-winning episode.
Ooh. Really?
Yeah, I mean, well, we haven't been nominated or won, but... If this episode doesn't, then there's just no justice.
Because the Amazing Race is always beating you guys unfairly.
Yeah. Yes, the time. But this is a good, tonight's just one of those great Survivor episodes where so much happens.
But the Amazing Race is one of those shows that everyone always says you should watch, but nobody ever watches. I mean, I've seen the Amazing Race and I go, wow, that's a really good show. And then 3 years later, I watch my next episode.
Right.
It's a weird, we were talking earlier about those things in life, like a restaurant that you go to where you go, this is awesome. I'm going to eat here every week for the rest of my life. And then 5 years later, you go back. You know what? The Amazing Race is that way. And you want to know what else is that way? Mushrooms. The first time I ate mushrooms, I'm talking psychedelic mushrooms.
Okay.
First time I got high on mushrooms, I was like, well,
I found
my calling. This is what I'm going to do.
Have you done them since?
I did it. The next time I did it was like 7 years later.
Yeah.
But I was like, and then I did it 7 years later. I was like, this is awesome. I got to do this every weekend. And then 8 years went by and I did it again.
What a shame.
I'm due, by the way.
You are due. Maybe on the premiere night of Dancing with the Stars.
Not a bad idea.
You can give it a little special something.
That would be...
Feel the music.
You can see the music if you're
freak
high.
Freak out! That's right. I just wrestle the microphone away from Bergeron, and I'm like, hey, man, what are we all doing here? Wearing the clothes that the man... And I start undressing, like, really slowly, and I'm like, these aren't clothes, man. This is the shawl of shame that the man makes us wear. Come on, baby.
Let's get naked, everybody.
Who's up tight? Who's uptight? I'm not uptight. Come on, man. We can make some change. You give me that mic. I start arguing with Probst. I push him to the side.
You want to go out with a bang.
That would be it, wouldn't
Fainting?
It?
Fainting? Marie Osmond?
Yeah, right. That was That's good. You got to top that.
Yeah, you got to top that.
Mm.
Well, speaking of tonight's episode, it's the fans versus the faves. What can you tell us about what makes it the future Emmy Award-winning episode?
Well, Teresa, it's just, this season, you know, the thing about Survivor is if you're a Survivor fan, you're watching. If you're not a Survivor fan, I don't think for a second you're going to go, honey, you know what? I just heard this guy talking about Survivor and we should check it out. So
this is all a waste of all of our time.
Essentially,
is what you're saying.
Gosh, maybe it is.
I disagree.
It's reminding people that,
right.
Teresa's right.
You can find Survivor, mid-Survivor, because of, first off, just the setting. Just the exotic locales enough are
Hot
breathtaking.
Women.
Hot women.
And I can pick it up if I just tune in tonight.
Yeah, you know, let's start over. Can you just ask me the tail end of that? Just the tail end.
Okay, let me take two. So, I know you probably can't tell us much, but what can you tell us about tonight's very special future Emmy Award-winning episode of Survivor?
Yeah, well, thanks for asking, Teresa. You're right. I can't divulge too much because one of the things about Survivor that keeps people watching and keeps us consistently in the top 12, top 13 shows of all shows in the world is that you never know what's coming. Tonight, it can tease you that there's a lot happening. A lot. There's some medical problems, serious medical problems.
Does anybody have to be choppered
Somebody
off?
May have to be taken out of the Ooh. Game.
Jeff got
a
herpes.
A sexy woman catches a shark.
One of the crew.
Really?
One of the crew?
Shark. Yeah, there's, yes. It's just a great full episode. A lot happens. And this is a good season for us because we've taken people who played before,
mm-hmm.
the favorites, and
sure.
put them against people who talk a lot of smack that they could do it.
Who, in your mind, after 16 seasons, played the game the best? Do you have, there's guys who had great personalities and guys who are great
right.
characters, but strategically, if we were talking about chess versus Survivor, just who is the best chess player that you worked with?
God, you know, it's like it. There's so many good players.
I'm going Boston Rob.
Yeah, Boston Rob's pretty good. Yeah, the guy that won Palau, Tom, this fireman, real heroic.
Right, Tom
guy.
Was great.
The original winner, Richard Hatch.
Hatch was unmatched. I don't know that Hatch was necessary.
He didn't have, you want to know what Hatch was? He's the Tank Abbott of Survivor players.
Now, who's Tank Abbott?
This is all going to come together
oh,
in
God.
One second.
Okay.
Back in the old days of the UFC, back in the octagon, back in the mixed martial arts days, they didn't have guys that were trained mixed martial art athletes because the sport didn't exist. They had tough guys. They had bouncers. They had brawlers. Tank Abbott was a big, hairy, big belly dude who'd go beat everybody up 15 years ago before it was a sport. So he was champion in a sport that wasn't a sport yet.
Yes.
Richard Hatch was a champion of Survivor before people knew how to play Survivor.
Okay, yes.
Later on, Tank Abbott went on to fight guys who had learned the sport of mixed martial arts and got his butt kicked.
Okay.
Hatch would probably get his ass kicked now against Boston Rob.
If he wasn't in prison.
Right,
for tax evasion.
Yeah. And by the way, nude in prison as well.
Yes, of course.
Not the place to be nude.
That's how he rolls.
With the name Hatch. But the point is he was the Tank Abbott. Before, now it's a sport. 16 seasons in, people have studied the game. They know the sport.
True.
They know the moves.
Yeah.
But for me, I like Boston Rob because he was a scrapper. He would get up in your head. He would talk, but he would also back it up physically.
Well, and Rob did one of the best things, again, only if you've watched him. But one thing he did when he played in this all-star thing is he fell in love with this girl, Amber, and she was about to be voted out.
I don't want to correct you, but Amber.
Amber.
Yeah.
And he went to this guy and said, please save her. If you save her, man, I will take care of you. Just save my girl. Please save my girl.
Mm-hmm.
And so this guy, Lex, saves his girl. And the next time Rob gets a chance, he cuts that guy's throat and goes, what, do you think I can leave you in this game?
Yeah.
I owe you too much. He was just a brutal
Lex, by the way,
strategist.
One of these guys, something I never thought I'd seen, something we didn't have to, our parents didn't have to deal with, but we now have to deal with it. The guy is completely sleeved with tattoos and has a nipple ring, and he's he's explaining how much he loves his teenage daughter.
Hell
and
yeah.
It's weird to have dad with a nipple ring, a sleeved nipple ringed dad, explaining what a family man he is.
Could I think he is.
Oh,
he's pretty
devoted
to that family.
But could you imagine growing up having your dad sitting there rocking a nipple ring going, hey, my son Jeff Probst, he's going to make an excellent host one day.
I saw a guy yesterday, probably about 18, sleeved all the way up through his neck, coming right up to his ear. And I was looking at him thinking, 18, you got a good 70 years maybe of that.
And what, by the way, in terms of money, time, and patience, like when I was 18, I couldn't get my teeth cleaned. It was too expensive and too much time. And the 20 minutes in the dental chair was like unthinkable.
Right.
The idea that you're just going to lay down and have some convict work on you for 4 hours at a time, and whatever money that costs, tats ain't free. Where the hell are all these 19-year-olds? Like, when I was 19, and you were 19, did you have $400 to, like, sort of just toss around on a nipple ring and a little body art?
Please.
Jeff Probst in studio. We need to take a break. We'll talk a little more Survivor, and speaking of surviving, Jimmy Kimmel. It's going to be on The Blower as well.
He saw you dance.
He came out to one of my rehearsals and made fun of me. We'll hear what he has to say in person. Jeff Probst, Survivor, tonight. Tonight's the Emmy Award winner. 8 o'clock, CBS, Jimmy Kimmel, Probst, next on The Adam Carolla Show.
Welcome back to The Adam Carolla Show.
Excuse me, is someone here Ben Affleck?
I am. I'm
great, sign here.
Thank you.
It's Jimmy Kimmel.
Congratulations on Ben Affleck.
On the Adam Carolla Show.
That was Brad Pitt, I do believe, on the video that's sweeping the internet. Jimmy effing Ben Affleck and Jeff Probst in studio.
I have a Jimmy Kimmel story.
Yeah?
Please.
Yes.
And I don't even know if, I'm going to believe that he knew it was me. But just to, what a nice guy Kimmel is. I was walking on Ventura Boulevard a couple months ago, and this like Range Rover or Land Rover or some really nice black car pulls up and honks next to me, and the windows are dark and I can't really see in. So I go back to see if it's a friend of mine, and the window rolls down. And it's Jimmy Kimmel. He says, "Hey, just wanted to say hi." We're not friends. I've met him like twice, and I was blown away. I was going, either he thought I was someone else, but he's cool enough to follow through and make me feel like it was me, which is what I will take to my grave. Or he's an incredibly nice guy going, there's a guy I met one time. I'm going to say hello. So I cross the street going, yeah, Jimmy, I'm on my phone going, Jimmy Kimmel just pulled up and said hi to me.
Let me give you a third option.
Cruising?
Brown bandana hanging out of the left rear of the Wrangler.
Jeff's a very attractive man.
He is easy on the eyes. And listen, you go with Jeff. That ain't going gay.
No.
He's better than most women I've been with.
He's prettier than a lot of women.
He's pretty. Jimmy?
Look who's talking, Denny Terrio.
Oh. Yes. You are so lucky Merv Griffin is not alive to hear that kind of talk, Jimmy Kimmel.
Hey, you know what? Hey, Jeff, how you doing? Of course I knew it was Jeff. But
oh, you did?
I feel like, even though I don't know Jeff that well, from the two of you being friends on the radio, that I'm part of the group. So that's why I wanted to say hello.
Nice. You've been kissed into the Probst family.
Yeah, in a way, I think Jeff and I have been kissed into the Carolla
family. Yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah.
Well, Jimmy, you came out on Monday to watch me dance with, well, as...
I love that sentence already.
As I've mentioned on the air, she's really dancing with herself now because she's a bigger star than I am, and she's supposed to be dancing with the stars, essentially, but it's ironic that she's actually a much bigger star than me.
Well, you know what? First of all, I have to say, I honestly, and I'm not joking, sometimes I lay in bed at night and I just think, I can't wait to see you on that show.
Yeah, I feel the same. And you're the only one in the inner circle who has actually seen Adam Carolla dancing.
I have seen him dancing. And first of all, little Julianne, for those who have not seen the show, is this adorable. I mean, she looks like the head of all head cheerleaders.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's right. And she puts the head in head cheerleader. I agree.
And when I walked in there, it was like, I felt, it was like Adam and Juliana was like when Frankenstein happened upon that little girl in the sandbox.
Fire. Yes.
It was a similar dynamic. But first of all, I called you. I know I insinuate, oh, this is gay and that, but it might be the least gay thing you've ever done. And I don't know how you avoid rushing to the bathroom and touching yourself repeatedly throughout the practice.
I do it once in the parking lot before I go on, and then a half hour into the lesson, I tell her I have to make a phone call, and I do it once again. So I'm basically dancing in my refractory period the entire time.
You know, we joke around about Adam and the fact that he talks just nonstop.
Yes.
Well, he talks just nonstop, and I think he even talked less than usual when we were there taping, because Julianne has a little code word, and Teresa, I think you might want to use this on the show. When Adam starts, and I observed this actually while they were talking, when Adam starts talking and is supposed to be dancing,
right.
She says, tangent.
Why has it been 2 years and I've never thought to come up with a code word?
Yeah, but that's the show. Tangent is.
Yeah, know, it would
be
nonstop.
The name of the show, I know, but
I should wait for 10 minutes into the tangent and then call tangent.
Well, sometimes the tangents can be a little bit too tangential.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
Well, yes, Julianne is trying to get me to rehearse. I want to talk about dance. I'd like to talk about the theory of dance and do a little less, a little more gum flapping, a little less foot movement.
Tangent. Now, Jimmy,
sorry.
How was Adam dancing?
Adam was pretty good, I have to say. He wasn't bad. His dancing was pretty good. It seems like he, Adam's pretty coordinated, and it seems like if Adam really buckled down and practiced, which of course is out of the question, he could be good at it, you know, but I don't really
promising.
See that happening.
This is very complimentary.
You know, even though the last time we practiced was when we saw you there, Jimmy, because...
No, was it really?
Well, Julianne has been in Nashville for the last 2 days, and I gotta tell you, when Julianne, and she's one of these people, like, you know how you deduct points for in person, like you go, all right, this person looks great on television, but when I see them on the street, there's no way they're going to look as good as they look on TV because of the makeup and the hair and all that and the imagination. And they're going to be shorter and have worse skin when I see them in real life. No drop off.
No, in fact, you might even tack on a couple of points.
Yeah, she's actually better, and it's great when she goes...
Tangent.
Shut up, Brian. It's great when she goes, like, she'll go to me, she'll go...
This is the greatest thing that's ever happened to the show.
I gotta go to Nashville for a couple days. You wanna come with? And I'll be like, yes. And she'll be like, we could practice dancing. And I'd be like... Yeah, we could, couldn't we? I suppose that would... Yes, that's right. That's what I'll tell my wife. And she's like, and then, when you go to Vegas the week before, I could come out to Vegas with you if you want. That would be awesome.
Meanwhile, I know she's recording a country album, but I understand that she was originally from Utah and then grew up mostly in England.
Mm-hmm.
Study dance.
High school in Las Vegas, I heard.
Oh, my God.
Adam knows everything about her. I mean, if you need to know anything about her, just ask Adam.
Right. I mean, he does nothing but listen.
We're both water signs. I know that. So we're compatible.
Right.
Well, are there odds yet on...
yes, there are.
And where's Corolla?
Well, according to the Wynn Casino, he does not have the longest odds. Penn Jillette has the longest odds. And then Monica Seles, and then Adam Carolla.
I'm actually, I'm between Larry Flint and Heath Ledger.
He's the third longest. Yamaguchi has the best
odds. You don't want to be first off.
No, you don't want to be the Kenny Mayne.
No, but the top 12 out of 12 dancers, I mean, somewhere in the 12 would be nice.
How many hours of rehearsal do you think Yamaguchi has put in, but just between your last rehearsal and now?
Several more hours than have actually passed. I believe she's
so
found a porthole in time.
If I were on this show, I would be the guy dancing all the time because I don't want to, you know.
Well, you have an ego, Probst. I do not.
Oh, where's the tangent? We need another word. Delusion.
Well, she's out of town for 2 days. What do you want me to do? And then on Monday, Kimmel's there with the cameras.
Wait, Kimmel, does Carolla really, truly just not care one way or another?
You know what? I think if somebody put it in perspective for him, he could really care. Adam has moments of where he suddenly will care and then will suddenly like click in. But I think, Adam, what you really have to think about is the fact that once this is done, once this Dancing with the Stars experiment is over, you will never see Julianne again.
Right.
Much less rub your private parts against hers.
Mm-hmm.
So you should try to keep that train rolling as long as possible.
That's a good point.
I told Julianne, you know, if you told Adam at the end of this, if we practice for 6 hours today and you practice really hard, we're going to take a shower together at the end of the thing. You would see, Rocky Balboa running up the steps.
That's right. One-arm push-ups, chasing a chicken around the dance floor.
Yep. You see all that stuff.
Yeah, Jimmy also said that she should promise me sex if we win. And then negate, nig on it.
But, on the deal
right,
the end,
but at
know?
Least that's, promise it.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea.
Yeah, that's what I said.
I mean, really, how many hours a day would you be practicing if that was the case?
Well, Bonaducci would be covering this shift, I can tell you that. I can tell you that
now. She has come out and said she's a virgin, so that would be very special for her to give that to you, Adam.
Wow.
For winning.
Strasser going right to it.
You know what? Next time I see your dad, I'll broach that topic with him.
Oh, that would be delightful.
Yeah. All right. Hey, Kimmel.
Yeah.
When, by the way, have you run that yet? I've been watching. I haven't seen it yet.
No, we're waiting for you to come on.
Ah, I see. And I think I'll be on the 13th?
Yeah, I think so.
Good times. Jimmy Kimmel Live, weeknights, 12:05.
Jeff, I'll see you on the street.
Sounds good, Kimmel.
ABC. You too, Teresa.
Bye, Jimmy.
Thanks,
bye.
Jimmy. All right.
Wow, I learned something so valuable.
What did you learn?
Tangent.
That.
I thought that I wasn't a half bad dancer.
I like the motivation. That is good. That is good future parenting skills. He's figuring out how to deal with you. He's right.
Right?
Yeah. Now, he already is a parent. He's got a teenager, so that's how he knows.
He is right. And yes, if there was a hot shower with Julianne and I after each workout session, I think there'd be some more work put in.
How much of a good sense of humor does your wife Lynette have about all this?
Oh, my God, it's exciting.
We were watching. Well, she knows Julianne's too good for me. I've explained that to her.
Well, that's cold comfort, though, yes. When you're rubbing groins all day.
She was watching a little footage.
Your face is red right now.
Oh, shut up. She was watching a little footage of, that's the orange paint they put on.
Oh, sorry.
She was watching a little footage of us on, like, one of those Entertainment Tonight shows, and she said, wow, your knee's really in her groin. And I'm like, baby, that's the way they make you do it. What are you going to do?
That's the way they make you do it.
You guys actually do look really, really good together. And you can see the photo of Adam and Julianne on adamcarolla.com.
Good times. All right. Jeff Probst. Best show on television, everybody. Survivor. Jeff, hang out with us. Why don't you?
Love to.
Survivor, fans versus favorites. It's on CBS. It's on tonight. It's 8 o'clock. I'll tell you what we'll do. Why don't we do a spirited round of what can't Adam complain about? Jeff, come up with your own topic. I've figured out a way to complain about just about everything on the planet. People can call up 866-901-ADAM. Toss out a topic you don't think I can complain about, and I will figure out a way to complain about it. Jeff, see if you can summon one in the next 5.5 minutes, and we'll be back after this.
Right now on the Adam Carolla Show, it's time for What Can't Adam Complain About? Call 866-901-ADAM.
Adam, I don't think you can complain about people who like to complain about things.
I can complain enough for the rest of you. I don't need your help. And you say, well, how do you know my complaint is meaningless? Here's how I know. I'm not complaining. I want a bunch of little lemmings who will sit back, close their mouth, and listen to moi complain.
What can't Adam complain about? Find out now on the Adam Carolla Show.
Jeff Probst from Survivor, everyone. Fans and favorites. Tonight, CBS, 8 o'clock. 16th season.
I tell you, tonight's going to be our Emmy award-winning episode.
The magic's going to happen.
And when people see it tonight, and I know there will be a thank you, I just want to thank the Academy for recognizing episode 5 of Survivor Fans versus Favorites on behalf of CBS and Mark Burnett and Leslie Moonves. Thank you very much. We really love being a part of the Emmys, and I'm holding the statue up right now. And thank you very much. I love you, Mom, and thanks to my agent, Sean Perry. And good night, everybody. I'll see you at the Governor's Ball.
From your mouth to God's choker.
Yeah, play it off.
You know, Jesus didn't wear a choker, but I feel like he was the kind of cat that would have rocked a choker just like Probst does.
Oh, he's got his choker.
He's got his choker on, and he could have gotten away with it, too, with the sandals and the frock that was hanging on him. I feel like it would have... Look, you know, I don't want to be blasphemous here, but, you know, up on the crucifix there, just wearing the chamois... The choker would have really added something to that ensemble.
Can I go on a very, very brief tangent?
Tangent
alert. We, Adam and I were talking about how interviewing people on the red carpet is the absolute worst job in show business. You're begging people to talk to you. They're running away. I don't know if you remember this, but I covered the Golden Globes for E! A few years back, and I was standing by the limo drop. It was after the show was over. So everybody who was going to lose had already lost. They were in foul moods. Nobody would talk to me. Juliana from E! Was supposed to throw to me, would just throw to commercial. So I'm standing there waiting, waiting, waiting. Finally, I get three people in 5 hours. I got... the wife from the Bernie Mac show, whose name I no longer remember, Mo Rocca, and Jeff Probst. Do you remember that?
Really?
Yeah. Total
and
blur.
Probst still took time to speak to you.
He took the time out to give me a minute and a half of an interview.
Was it worth it?
Yes, that was all I had. Otherwise, I would have been a total goose egg.
I did Access Hollywood for a year.
So you know the pain.
Oh, man. And you stand on the other side of that red rope or whatever the hell it is, and you are reaching your arm out so far to see if someone will put their face in front of your microphone. It's pretty tough.
It's desperate.
And it is.
So thank you.
Couldn't imagine being in a more pressure-filled spot because you're constantly doing that. What's that guy from that show he was on? He had that hit record in the 70s, and then he did the sitcom, but I can't remember what's his name. And now he's standing in front of you.
Oh, I had to ask Justin Long what his name was. I couldn't remember. I knew he looked familiar. I'm so sorry.
But now they have spotters in IFBs, right? They have earpieces?
Yeah, but sometimes there are 22-year-old interns, and they don't know Justin Long's name.
And the other thing that's hard to do is you're waiting and you get somebody and it's somebody whose name you really can't remember. They're a nice person, but they're on a show that they're the third lead in or whatever.
Right.
And then you hear somebody say, get rid of him, get rid of him, get rid of him, because somebody bigger's coming. And then you have to be this rude person going, yeah, thanks a lot. And it's just an awkward,
You're on West Wing and you just stand in a doorway. You've got
to
go.
I would love to be the guy who commandeered the mic that went to the IFB in your ear from the van parked down the street.
Like,
it's like, who's that guy? This is Harry Paratestes. He played in That's My N-Word, 70 sitcom.
I'm live here with Harry Paratestes. And,
That's My N-Word.
That's My N-Word.
That was a new sitcom from the 80s.
What parties are you going to tonight, Harry?
Ugly.
Harry Belafonte standing in front of you with a look on his face.
The only thing worse than that is that the people often, mostly, on the other side of the red carpet take it more seriously than you do.
Mm-hmm.
That they really do enjoy the chaos that is.
Here comes Anus Cornhole.
I'm standing here with Anus Cornhole. She's up for best supporting. He's up for. Tell me what he's
best
up
for. Supporting Dillweed.
Best supporting Dillweed.
He's got. I hear you're going to Africa to kill AIDS babies.
I understand you're interested in killing AIDS babies.
No, actually, I'm not. I'm from the West Wing. Teresa, I'm sorry.
West Wing my ass.
West Wing my ass.
Hey, you're looking very short and fat. Did you put weight on?
I understand you've put on some weight. You look a little short and fat.
You're good, though, because you take it and then you make it your own. That's nice.
Right. Sorry to hear about your father who died at that bathhouse.
I understand that your father died an untimely death of AIDS. I'm very sorry.
Tragic jacuzzi accident.
Very tragic jacuzzi accident.
I wouldn't even know what to do. I'd just be standing here staring at you.
Oh, quickly, here comes Dick Rambo. Come on. We're going to get this guy,
Dick,
here. Dick, out of here.
Dick, can you stand over here? I'm here with Dick Rambo.
Rambone.
Wait, Rambone. I'm so sorry, Mr. Rambone. I'm here with Dick Rambo.
I'm not Dick Rambone, but you're very attractive. Who do you work for?
Thank you. Right now I'm working
Hitler.
For...
Hitler.
Adolf Hitler.
Oh, that's just you're a comedian. That's very, very funny. Is this what station is this or channel?
No, I'm serious. I work
place.
For the Hitler state.
I actually do work for the Hitler state.
Hey, I think you got a booger. Is that a booger? Can I get that booger out of your nose?
I should point out that you seem to have a booger.
Okay, I can't
Coke?
Play at this level. I can't play without someone in my ear. I'm lame.
Did you know that the Jews were responsible for 9/11?
Last question before we let you go for the night. Because I know you got a lot of parties and the Vanity Fair party and everything,
yes.
But I can't let you go without asking, do you realize that the Jews were responsible for 9/11?
No, I didn't know that, but I'd like to know more over dinner later.
Hey, you want to do some booger sugar later with me in the bathroom?
I was just curious if you'd like you and I to do some cocaine.
God. I'm ready to yell tangent. I give.
All right. I'm just saying it would be fun to commandeer the spotter's mic.
You just did.
I think I just did.
You'd be very good at it.
That is a pressure-filled job. All right, now, shall we do What Can Adam Complain About? Shall we take a break? Shall we get back on time? Let's do What Can Adam Complain About.
Still,
you want to do
good
it?
Calls.
Stuff. The world is full of it. And one man has a complaint for it all. This is What Can't Adam Complain About?
All right, you call in, you toss out the topic, and I will complain about it. Louis, which one are you?
Louis.
Louis, what do you got? Or Louise. Oh, this is. Let me go on a tangential complaint here. This is the problem.
Let's consider this a complaint and ring the bell.
One of the problems with living in Los Angeles is I want to turn everyone's name into a Spanish surname. If I see a guy named Louis, I immediately just change it to Luis because we're here in L.A. We're half Spanish speaking already. We'll be 75% by the time my kids are in high school, although they'll not be able to attend a public high school for that reason.
Yeah, you called Mr. Probst Yef.
But, all right, let's go, Louis. What do you got?
Firefighters or firemen, America's heroes.
Never have guys gotten so much ass for doing so little. Being a fireman, first off, multiple complaints. They're not all heroes. The guys that are dead from 9/11, those guys are heroes. The rest of them are playing ping pong right now in essentially a frat house where you get paid to hang out, slide down a pole, eat chili every night, and every once in a while you got to go get a cat out of a tree. Now, I know they do the movies where they go, no time for backup, I'm going in, but I've seen the news. Half those guys are just sitting in the rig throwing water at the problem from a nice safe distance. What a gig. You work 3 days... and then you get 4 days off. It's not a full-time gig. And by the way, those 3 days, half that time is sleeping, playing bumper pool, and hanging out watching TiVo with a bunch of your other pals. I wanted to be a fireman one day because I thought this is a cool gig. You get the same paycheck a cop gets, you don't get shot at, and instead of bullets flying your way, you got poontang being tossed
Very
at
good.
You.
I'm impressed.
Women love firemen, and they love a man in a uniform, except for the cop thing comes with some baggage. Maybe he's a bad cop, maybe he's a racist cop, maybe the chick you're trying to pick up got a ticket for a chicken-ass rolling stop 2 days ago and doesn't want to hear about anyone in blue. Firemen, above reproach. All heroes, and again, when's the last time a hero just hung out and played ping pong all day and ate chili on my dime?
Teresa, do you ever just get up and go get a cup of coffee and then come back?
In
to
my
lose?
Mind.
That's very good.
I'm sipping a cappuccino right now.
Let's talk to Joe on 26. Joe, line 5.
Hi.
Hey, what's up?
How you doing, Adam? Good morning, gentlemen.
Good
and
to talk
Teresa.
To you.
Hi.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to say you guys are great. I've been listening to you, Adam, since the Love Line.
Thank you.
You guys are awesome. You get me through my morning.
Tangent.
What can't I complain about?
Adam, you can't complain about your dance partner.
Julianne Hough. Well, couple of things. A, like I said, it's Dancing with the Stars. She's supposed to be the dancer. I'm supposed to be the star. Yet when Entertainment Tonight brings the camera crew, they knock me out of the way and they talk to her for 20 minutes and then they pack up their sticks and leave.
Physically knock you out.
Oh, one guy asked me to hold the boom mic, actually, last time during the interview. It does suck when the chick you're dancing with is a bigger star than you are. That's suck number one. Suck number two, I understand I'm married and I understand she has a boyfriend, but can't we pretend for a couple hours out of the day as we intimately move across the parquet? Her boyfriend picks her up every single day from practice. I don't like that.
Is he cute?
He's dreamy. That's right. Not as dreamy as our own Jeff Probst. But the point is I got to get the stink eye from the hunky guy every time the sweat hairy ball, which is me, is walking down in the Capizios going solo to my car. There's her beautiful ass sliding into his Lexus. I don't like that. Now, look, we're not going to have an affair. We're probably not going to have an affair. That dream of us opening a dance studio in Maui was squashed many weeks ago. But can I pretend? Can't you find your own ride home? And by the way, what's her boyfriend doing that every single weekday at 1:30 he can just swing
He's
by the dance studio? I don't need that vulture buzzing around my carcass. Let me eat.
I got one for you. The moment, the hopefully long extended moment just before orgasm.
That's moment. Tough. That moment frozen in time of, uh-oh, this is it. Well, that's good if you want the orgasm. But if you do not want the orgasm, as is often the case with the Ace Man, that moment that I'm supposed to relish goes into Chinese fire drill in my mind of, oh, no. And then a half a look out and then get out of the way right into REM. So, the moment just before orgasm, which should be the best part of your life, oftentimes, if the timing is wrong, whether it's your stepmom coming down the hall and you're alone, as oftentimes is the case with the Ace Man, or you're with your partner and you're 20 minutes before her almost moment, can come up and bite you in the ass, but not a bad effort by our own Jeff Probst. Mark.
Hey, Adam, how's it going?
What's happening?
Hey, I got something you can't complain about. Ben Affleck taking over your man love duties to Jimmy Kimmel.
Well, where do I begin with that one? Sure, it's a chore, given Kimmel is loving on a nightly basis. He's a passionate man. But then I found out the two just got together and watched television. Now, it's one thing if your man is stepping out on you and having a physical affair, but
right,
it's another thing
sex.
When you guys are spooning in front of Lost.
The emotional connection.
Yeah. That's right. Kimmel said to me, and I think he did it on purpose. He said, after we're done filming our little gay porn video for YouTube, guess who decided to pop over to the Kimmel residence and watch Lost? Undoubtedly arm in arm on Jimmy's sofa. And I said, what side of the sofa did Ben sit on? And he said, the left side. And I said, that's my side. And if I come over there and I see your two silhouettes in the shade, I will come in there like a heavy-set black woman, and it'll be all extensions and press-on nails. I'll open a can of whoop-ass on that man, and you know what? If you're listening, Affleck, you ain't gonna be so pretty anymore. You're gonna have to move behind the camera, and you're gonna have to stay there full time. I hope you like the director's chair, because that's where you're gonna be, because you will be too gruesome to be on television or on the big screen anymore once the Ace Man gets done. I'll go off like a scorned badger on your face. I'll be all cuticles and teeth, buddy. And when I'm done with you, you'll look like something that came out of Hitchcock's lab. And speaking of cock, Kimmel, You better, you know what, Probst?
Speaking of Hitchcock.
Yes. You know what we're going to have to do? Next time we see Kimmel and you're walking down Ventura Boulevard with that brown bandana hanging out of your left pocket, and we see Kimmel come rolling up in his Land Rover.
Lay it on me.
I want to lay the biggest, juiciest kiss you've ever seen. Now, I'll be peeking as a single tear rolls down Kimmel's eye and he drives right on by.
I smell a new video. I'm effing Jeff Probst.
That's right. There you go. All right. That's enough of that nonsense. Dana Gould.
Oh. That was What Can't Adam Complain About?
Jeff Probst, best show on television. I've said it many times. I will say it again, everyone. Survivor. Tonight, Thursday night, CBS, 8 o'clock. 16th season. I think they must be doing something right.
And tonight's episode is going to be especially phenomenal.
Emmy Award winning. Thank you, Teresa.
Jeff Probst, great to see you as per usual.
By the way, I just now realized the reason I couldn't hear you is there's this little toggle switch in these headphones is kind of got a short. And I was going, God, I keep looking for the volume, but it wasn't working. I hope it was good.
You missed an ear party, my friend. Dana Gould. Coming in next, we're going to break down the Huell Howser tape. Nobody does better Huell than Dana, and we'll do that next on the Adam Carolla Show.
Back to the Adam Carolla Show.
I've become somewhat addicted to court TV. You'll learn a lot from it. Like, here's something I did not know. Every 6 years, Charles Manson is eligible for parole. Does he still get his hopes up? Tell me he's up all the night before in his cell working on his handshake. Charles Manson, nice to see you. A pleasure. Charles Manson, how are you? Fantasizing about the job he'll get when he gets out. Charles Manson, Emerson Drywall, come on in the showroom. Trying to cover up the swastika, maybe bangs.
And now Dana Gould is on the Adam Carolla Show.
Great to see you, Dana. Very exciting whenever Dana Gould comes in. Because
what a timely Charles Manson bit.
Well, every 6 years you can do the routine.
I know.
That means, and by the way, whenever these guys come up for parole, the mom of Sharon Tate makes the pilgrimage out from like Oklahoma or Wyoming or wherever she is. And don't you feel like if you're the parole board and she's like, yeah, I'm Cheryl Tate. I'm Sharon Tate's mom. I'm going to buy, I think we can handle this one. Yeah. We're cool.
Yeah. No, not a lot of movable delegates.
Yeah. Well, hey, but we appreciate the help, but I think Charlie, I think this one's pretty much a layup.
The guy with the swastika on his head. Nah.
Yeah, that's
he's
right.
He's going back.
Right.
And he's only I think he was 5'2". He's tiny.
Yeah, he has a little Napoleon complex. And by the way, if
I start calling it a Manson complex.
I was going to say, if I'm Napoleon's heirs, I'm saying, all right, I've had a nice 400-year run here with the little man jokes. How about you move on? No other short guys that did any damage through history?
Yeah, nope.
How about the Manson complex, huh? All right, so Dana Gould in studio. We'll get to we'll get to Huell Howser in a couple of few because Dana does a delightful Huell. But you wanted to talk a little politics first.
I was talking to my father about the upcoming, because my dad was like one of those Reagan Democrats, like those yellow dog Democrats would vote for any Democrat over a Republican. Mm-hmm. And then was finally put to the test.
He was not a Reagan Republican.
Until Reagan.
He was a Democrat and then Reagan rolled
around. Until Mondale. Okay. And then he became a Reagan Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
And then basically he's been voting Republican. Mm-hmm. But he hates Bush. To his credit.
Mm-hmm.
He finally has had enough of that guy.
Right, right.
But, his whole theory about, but now I think he's going back because his theory about Obama is mm-hmm. that Obama's going to get elected, and then he's going to, quote, black out.
Oh. You mean he's maintaining a white posture now, but as soon as he gets elected, his afro is just going to explode like Will Ferrell's or something?
He's going to turn to the mic as soon as he's sworn in. Mm-mm, baby. crazy.
It would be funny if the second he was done being sworn in, his afro exploded. Yeah. He did that move.
Dashiki underneath the suit.
He pulled the suit up. He's wearing a dashiki. All of a sudden, the president's limousine like drops 4 inches and spinners start going around on it, and it just starts thumping. You just hear a bass thump coming from
instead
a boombox.
Instead of waiting to the crowd, he gives the black power salute.
Exactly. My dad has
puts a black glove on, makes a fist, holds it up like he's in the 68 Olympics.
Has a genuine, guess who's slave starting Monday morning? That's right.
Yeah.
His first act will be rescinding the Emancipation Proclamation.
Yeah. You know, that is... Yeah, the theme from Shaft replaces the Pledge of Allegiance.
Yep.
Your kids standing up in a school with their right hand over their heart. They're all wearing a chain mail vest. You have to shave your kid's head, and he has to put wraparound sunglasses on.
That's
Who's the black commander in chief?
Barack! Shut your mouth. Stop a Barack.
They're doing now in the armed forces, when somebody gets injured, they just drive by a hospital and throw them out in front of the emergency room and peel out.
I want to introduce you to my vice president. You know him as Clever Lang. Mr. T. Yeah.
Fred Williamson.
The hammer. Fred Williamson comes up and is like, yeah, every guy who's ever been in a Colt 45 commercial in the 70s resurfaces now.
I've been looking for you, King Cobra.
Billy D. Williams.
I got to tell you, you want to have some fun. I don't know if they have them on YouTube, but go back and look at some malt liquor commercials from the 70s. All black club. Guy goes to the office on the second floor, opens the door. There's the hammer.
Yeah.
Sitting, Fred Williamson sitting behind the desk. He's like, I'm looking for a hammer. He has a desk made for drinking. He hits a secret button. A drawer slides open, filled, lit, and then filled with ice in a big Colt 45 in the middle of it.
Every this is my drinking desk.
They knew their demo back then.
I just remember those Billy D. Williams ads, because at the time I was like, why is Lando Calrissian getting drunk in the back of a sedan? I've been looking for you, King Cobra. I bet you have.
Yeah, I'm not sure if you could just steer malt liquor toward black folks these days. But either way, that would be a nice little walk down history lane. So your dad is scared that Obama is putting on a white front, essentially.
And that he's gonna
black out.
And the other thing is people say, well, maybe it'll be an Obama-Clinton ticket. Yes, let me tell you, ladies and gentlemen, there's nothing that warms my father's heart more than seeing a black guy with a white chick. That would delight him to no end.
Well, you know, Norm MacDonald, late in the show yesterday, had a very interesting observation, which was, your voting is sort of split down the middle. You do the part where you take a look at the candidate's stance on the issues and you go, you know, Roe v. Wade or foreign policy or immigration or alternative fuels. You do that. But then half, and maybe even more than half, and we don't want to admit it, is, do we like the person's vibe? You know what I mean? Hillary Clinton sort of suffers from that, we think. And, you know, many politicians have suffered from that over the years, where they're actually smart, educated guys who would make a good president, but we didn't trust them. They seemed a little shifty. Their eyes were too close together. Right. Now, you can't do that with Obama because he's black. Like, you can't go, I like his stance on education, healthcare reform, and Iraq, but I don't trust that guy.
Well, that's why Bush, they said Bush won basically in 2000, was that people just seemed like he would be a cooler guy to hang out with than Al Gore. But you don't do that in other positions of importance. Like, just give me the pilot that looks like he's easy to hang out with.
I
don't care I don't care who does my brain surgery. I just want him to be like a cool guy that I can chill.
It is weird, as if everybody's going to hang out for a long weekend at Camp David and do a little horseback riding with whoever's in office. I know it's ridiculous because it's true. You want the best pilot you can find. Yeah. I don't want a guy that has a lot of social skills or looks like he'd be a good time on a pub crawl. I want a guy who knows how to fly 777 when he finds out the landing gear is jammed.
So you would not want to go on a pub crawl with, say, James Stockdale?
Right.
Right.
Abe Lincoln was not a good companion on a booze cruise.
No.
But he did a nice job. He was a he was a historical goon.
Right.
But he was the best president.
And it is funny that you don't, like I said, or like Dana said, brain surgeon, pilot, someone, right. Tech guy. The guy who comes to your house and sets up the, you know, television with the surround yeah. sound. You don't go, I know this guy's the best, but I don't feel like he'd be fun to tilt a beer with at the end of the, no, you want the best guy who could possibly do that. But with the president, you go, eh, if we hung out, I don't, when are you hanging out?
Yeah, I know.
I guess there's some socializing that they have to do with other leaders.
I don't think this dude would get along with my buddy Ray and Todd from yeah. the Valley.
Yeah, I would, I could not get in, if I was driving to Van Nuys on the 101 at 5 on a Friday,
yeah.
it's got to be with somebody I
you
can
know,
hang out.
Yeah, like if Gore and I ever go on, like, let's say a beer run, I don't want him boring me with talk about the greenhouse effect and stuff.
Or
if we ever take like a long weekend to Palm Springs, or I shoot a couple rounds of golf with it, like when are you spending this kind of time with him? And by the way, historically, have you got a lot of FaceTime in with the last four or five presidents? Yeah, what are you basing this on?
Yeah, maybe you built a house with Carter.
Yeah, like, yeah, he's not the kind of guy I'd like to put a deck on with and then crack a bud with and just relax.
I think it was Kennedy that was maybe the first president that sort of, well, no, I don't know.
Had the charisma thing going for him?
Well, it was just clearly one of those things, like Kennedy versus Nixon, it was definitely, well, this guy, I certainly would rather hang out with him
yeah.
than
also,
Gollum.
Also, right. But also, it's like, yeah, the one guy seems nervous, the other guy's a hot wife and likes yeah. to go sailing in Nantucket. That's a guy I could yeah. hang with.
Like, he also happen to be smart and well-educated, as sure. well as having that I'd have a beer with you thing.
Yeah. Right, but so much charisma. But again, Obama, you can't play that, I just don't trust him because you're mm-hmm. just screaming you're
right,
racist.
Well, if you think about the most popular kid in your high school class, you don't want that guy mm-hmm. running your country.
Mm. Do no. we have, hold on, we have a Billy D. Williams Colt 45 ad?
It's 5 seconds of brilliance.
Okay.
I'm going to like this a lot.
There it is. D. Williams talks about Colt 45.
There are two rules to remember if you want to have a good time. Rule number one, never run out of Colt 45. Rule number two, never forget rule number one.
All right. That was like one of those things where he's like, rule number one, can I get paid? Yeah. Oh, no, Billy, we have another two lines of dialogue you have to get through.
He showed up like Bela Lugosi and Ed Wood, too. He was like, my money.
Rule number one, Billy D. always gets cash up front when he goes into a recording studio.
No. Billy D. and Chuck Berry both get, you meet him at the airport with a suitcase of cash.
It's like, wow, his heart was into that one. Yeah, Billy D. for Colt 45, but still Fred Williamson for Colt 45.
Chewbacca,
was great
you
too.
Still hanging out with this loser? I wish that bandolier was full of Colt 45. I'm going to get me a bandolier of Colt 45.
Dana Gould in studio. Go on YouTube, Bald Brian, and see if you can dig up some more of those great old super racist malt liquor commercials
but he also,
from the 70s.
But he went from that to King Cobra.
Right, right.
He was the guy if you needed to sell malt liquor. By the way, what is malt liquor?
I guess it's sort of like what fortified wine is. It's bad beer with a little extra punch.
More alcohol by volume?
It's basically folks who... Look, there's
is it a timeless combination of beer and syrup? That's my theory.
Well, there's a... there is a kind of a weird, there's a weird thing that goes on in the black community, and look out, I may be getting myself into trouble.
Are you going to black out right
I'm
now?
I'm going to black out for a second, but I've made this observation about the brothers. They're in the yummy phase. Even their cigarettes have to taste like candy. You know what I mean? They like stuff that tastes good. They like grape soda and the fried chicken and the fried catfish, and they don't like poached salmon. You know what I mean? Those folks like yummy stuff, and believe me, I've spent quite a bit of time with those folks. They have a sweet tooth. They like fried stuff and whatever. Now, as far as the booze goes, oftentimes they'll drink the booze that has the little flavor infused into it, but nothing tastes worse than malt liquor. yet that seems to be the drink of the brother. So it's a weird thing. It's
or
just
was it in the 80s? I don't know.
Maybe the brothers have gotten away from the malt liquor these
Let's
days.
Let's call the average African American. Get Larry Elder on the phone. Let's find him.
And see, I know he speaks for all blacks. See if he's enjoying a cold one as we speak.
Guy. The show used to have a guy, Tony.
Right.
But he's disappeared.
Well, he came in smelling of malt liquor a couple of times, and then we couldn't find him because his phone got shut off. But maybe that's something that doesn't happen anymore, because malt liquor is the world's worst tasting beer, but you get loaded. Like, here's what you do with beer.
It's super beer.
You do this sort of thing where you go, I like to catch a buzz, but I also like the taste of a nice Sierra Nevada on a hot day. Versus, I just want to catch a buzz. I have $1.50 and I would like to get loaded. That's what malt liquor's for.
I think we might need another code along with tangent. Yeah.
Do you have anything else?
Raises tangent.
I like the effective beer, but I like the sated feeling of eating a can of frosting.
Right.
Yes, there is a King Cobra malt liquor commercial from 85 with Fred Williamson.
Oh, please.
Bill, but you gotta pump this up.
He's still in amazing shape.
Yes.
And here we go.
If you've only experienced harsh malt liquor taste, it's time to change.
Okay, so black and white is turning to color.
It's so good when the taste grabs you. It's a different breed, it's quality.
Dancers in the background.
It's cold malt liquor satisfaction and a smooth taste. So when you pop the top, what's the clue?
Don't let the smooth taste fool you.
King Cobra. Anheuser-Busch brewed it to give cold malt liquor satisfaction.
King Cobra.
Don't let the smooth taste fool you.
Fred goes off to dance.
Wow, just sounds as
in other words,
fresh.
Don't let the pleasant experience mislead you. You're going to get blitzed. You will not be able to raise your hand to shake the
Fred the Hammer Williamson, everybody.
And that was from 85. That was not like, you know, I recall 1985 as being an enlightened era.
Yeah, that was quite the opposite message from Great Taste, Less Filling.
Mm-hmm.
The exact opposite.
Dana the Hammer Gould in studio. When we come back, we'll see if we can dig up a few more malt liquor commercials, but also Huell Hauser. And Huell went out looking for ladybugs this time. Let's hear a clip.
Sack full of ladybugs.
He's got himself a sack full of ladybugs. All right, Dana Gould, Huell Hauser, and maybe some King Cobra next.
Right now on the Adam Carolla Show, it's time to break down the game film from another episode of PBS's Huell Hauser.
Okay, now the fun begins.
This time, Huell goes in search of ladybugs.
Oh, wait a minute, these bugs are sleeping.
That's right, they're hibernating, so to speak.
So, they're moving around, they're not sleeping.
And we'll get a little help from Dana Gould.
This is amazing!
On the Adam Carolla Show.
Dana Gould in studio at the Punchline in San Francisco tonight. Two shows Friday and Saturday night, and tickets right on punchlinecomedyclub.com. Now,
as opposed to Punchline Auto Body, I suppose they had to be specific.
punchlinecomedyclub.com. Dana, we always bring him in when we bring Huell in. I don't know who came first, Huell or Dana. Either way, we enjoy them both. Now, Huell's a guy, I'll explain quickly, a fixture out here in Southern California. Has done California's Gold for many years on the PBS station, and evidently lives in a environment free of either expectations or competition, because he just goes out with his camera, shoots almost anything, comes back, and they air it, and he's been doing it for 30 years.
He is to wonder what skunks are to smell.
Mm-hmm.
You can't have more of it one organism.
No. Maybe you can tie him, but I feel like I haven't met that person yet. Huell is amazed, and you know, I've said it many times, Huell ought to rent himself out so that people can raise their self-esteem, because when you're feeling pretty bad about yourself, you got divorced, you moved into a one-bedroom apartment, you're sleeping on a futon and watching a black and white TV, one of your buddies comes over and calls you a loser, but Huell would come in and go, is that a Zenith? Yeah. Is that a 12-incher?
This is called the Oakwood. It's amazing.
A futon. town.
You can look right down on Warner Brothers from here.
Right. I haven't seen Russ colored Jag since my 70s sitcoms. This is amazing.
And this apartment came with a lot of videotapes. Like, you don't have to rent any.
Well, he has an infinite sense of awe, so I can't imagine how he feels about ladybugs.
Well, let's find out as Huel goes on his journey to not only buy ladybugs, or at least talk to people that sell. They sell ladybugs for gardening. And then there are guys who go out. Evidently, ladybugs are the good pests.
Oh, boy.
So they go out and they buy these. They go out and they collect these things, and then they sell them to garden stores. But let's listen to Huel.
Tell us about ladybugs, because I know why I get ladybugs. Why do most people stop here at the farmer's market to get their ladybugs?
Well, ladybugs are a beneficial insect that eats a lot of the bad insects, aphids, thrips, scale. And this is a natural way to have nature take care of itself, so you don't have to use poisons, because poisons don't really work.
How do
so
they work on pubic lice? Because Louie...
That's why I get ladybugs. He never elucidated on that. I know why I get ladybugs. Why is that, Huel?
I know. For vastly different reasons than other people would get ladybugs.
If you inside the glory hole. Pesto.
I have a ladybug circus. I also film ladybug porn. But other folks use it for gardening.
Lady on ladybug porn.
It's always great, too, with Huel, because the people he talks to are always a little bit surprised that somebody is more interested in their crap than they are.
Yeah, well, I wanted to be an ophthalmologist, actually, and...
But what about ladybugs?
All right, well,
that's amazing!
If you become a meth addict during ophthalmology school, well, you end up selling ladybugs.
How many ladybugs are in that sack? How many ladybugs do you think you sell a year?
I don't know, 1,000,006?
A million!
Jesus.
That's a lot of ladybugs! You must love your job.
No, I don't really.
Well, that's amazing. And so now, do you live in a ladybug house?
No, what I do is I tend to drive slowly behind a bus with the windows down. I'm just hoping to get enough fumes.
That is a wonderful story. I envy you.
Daily nightmare.
Your whole life is ladybug.
My kids call someone else daddy.
Did you name any of them ladybug? I know. He's talking to people. He's literally talking to people who've worked in a Menudo factory for 28 years and want to kill themselves. And they're always like, I don't know. I was kind of kissed into the business because my grandfather came here from Mexico. And, he bought this pile of crap over here.
I just take it over the matching track suits everyone wears.
Yeah, that was Grandpa's idea. They're ill-fitting. They're kind of uncomfortable, and most of the time people make fun of us when we're in them.
I just think this is an amazing place.
Well, like I said, my grandfather started the business in 72. I originally wanted to be an architect, but
fun if we and all the workers went out in the parking lot, stripped down, and someone chased us around with a hose.
Yeah, you know, most of the people here are illegals, and they're not really go-getters.
Who is the retarded gentleman eating corn out of that bucket?
That's our chief inspector. That's our quality control inspector. Well, you know, Menudo's not an exacting science, and the people that eat it aren't exactly scientists.
He really loves corn. He doesn't differentiate between corn and cob. It all goes in.
Huel, could you please take me with you? God, please. Just take me with you. I don't care where you're going. Just let me get in that goddamn van.
Huel is like the ghost of Christmas past. He has the lives of these people that tried to escape their jobs living in his body.
Huel, I don't care what you need me to do. I'll be a bottom. I don't care what. I'll be a human tripod for that camera. Just take me in the van. You and Louie can take turns on me. I don't care. Just get me out of this goddamn Menudo factory, please.
And then he gets really serious. Huel doesn't accept safe words. That's all right. Screaming apple, I'm just going to think you want an apple.
I have to imagine that that was only the beginning of the ladybug adventure. And that there was much more to uncover.
Wow, you're driving a dog team here. You're going to get this bit on the air.
He's mushing us along. All right, so Huel's next stop is to the farmer's market. He's going to speak to a ladybug salesman. And by the way, I've seen these guys with their permatans and their slick hair and their $500 Italian suits.
I know these guys.
They got a line for every situation. Real ladies' men, ironically, the ladybug salesman.
Okay, first off, don't adjust your TV set. There's nothing wrong with it. We're out of focus on purpose. Because before we started this adventure, we had to promise not to give away our location. So all I can tell you is that we spent a whole day somewhere in California on this very exciting but secretive ladybug expedition.
Oh, that's when he barks on the journey. Yeah, because if Al-Qaeda finds out where those ladybugs are hiding, that's it.
Their plan is to get America inundated with aphids.
Once they cut off our ladybug supply, that's it. It's only a matter of time before all the crops die, the aphids take over, and we're all praying to Allah. All right, so now, because he couldn't give away the secret ladybug location, and I happen to see this one. He's standing by a river, as if somebody at home goes, "Hey, I recognize that rock. I know exactly where that is.
Now the ladybugs will be mine."
Honey, pack up the ladybug sack. We're hitting the road. All right, so now Huel is going to talk to the ladybug collector, and I don't want to give away too much, but he brought along his son, and if anyone from Child Protective Services is watching, I consider this abuse of the highest order. Here we go.
We've kind of kept this whole thing a secret because the ladybug collectors like you don't want to give away your ladybug locations. They're prized possessions once you locate where they are, aren't they?
Yeah, you work all your life to find these places, so you don't want to give them up. It's kind of like a gold mine, you know?
And how do you know where to look for ladybugs?
That's kind of a secret in itself.
There are lots of secrets when it comes to ladybugs.
Yeah, I'm afraid so.
It's exactly like a gold mine if it had been stripped of all its gold and filled with bucks.
I don't know if you guys appreciate the fact that Huel Hauser is embedded with the ladybug people.
What did you work all your life for? To find ladybugs, a place where there's a lot of ladybugs? Really?
Life's work.
Yeah.
So if
I worked on my life to master bone marrow transplants.
Interesting.
Did you find a lot of ladybugs in there? No. Didn't think so.
I would have liked to have gotten hold of this cat, by the way, truthfully, in the ninth grade. Like, what do you want to be when you grow up, astronaut? I don't think ladybug wrangler would have been first on the list.
What are those little red things with the black dots on?
By the way, do you think this guy sat down with his guidance counselor in the 10th grade? Let's see. Farmer, school teacher, fireman. Ah, here we go. You're going to round up ladybugs.
Yeah. His guidance counselor had a desk full of empty airport Seagram's bottles. I say, what do you want to do? No, I'm going to tell you what you're going to do, and then you're going to get out of my office, okay?
Well, Huel talks a little more ladybug with the collector.
So ladybugs are seasonal.
Very seasonal, yeah.
In what way?
Well, in the spring they'll come in, and there's only a small window as to when you can actually find them. Otherwise, they'll bury underground, and you won't find them.
They live underground?
Well, during the late part of summer, yeah. They'll bury down and try to escape the heat.
And then what do they do?
Well, they'll stay there until March, and along about then they'll fly back to the valley and lay eggs and die.
Okay, so they live here until they fly back to the, San Joaquin Valley?
Yeah, or Sacramento Valley or wherever you want to go.
Lay their eggs.
And die.
And die.
Mm-hmm.
That's my favorite part of the hard-hitting Huell interview, when he repeats exactly what the person just said to him, except for one-tenth the speed, while the person follows along repeating exactly what they just said to him.
And for a man with Huell's sunny disposition, it's fun to watch him grapple with the concept of death.
Oh, I was just thinking that.
And then what do they do? It's coldness, it's blackness.
They die. They go to the great abyss, the great beyond.
And then they can fly around.
No, Huell, I'm sorry. That's the end of their life. You know, we're all going to...
Are they with my grandmother? Because she's...
They're quite possibly feasting on her corpse as we speak, Huell.
It's apparently a carnival.
Yeah.
It's like, death is better than life. Death is better than life.
Well, Huell, I hate to break it to you, but everything we know will pass one day. We will all die. We will all join the ladybugs in the ground.
Do ladybugs go to our heaven, or do they have their own heaven?
It's unclear, Huell. I'd like to think if we're tilling the soil in our heaven, if in fact we're raising crops, then I don't know if aphids go to hell and ladybugs go to heaven. I'd like to think that ladybugs do exist in heaven. Yeah.
How much bad do I have to do to not get into heaven? Does it count if you spray hairspray in a cat's eyes?
Huell, listen, I'm no theologian, but...
if you have to get up early and a cat's making a lot of noise...
Again, I haven't studied the Bible, but I do know about your alternative lifestyle, and I'd say that's enough to get you a ticket to hell right there.
I have like 12 cans of Aquanet by the side of the bed and a Siamese cat.
Like I said, Huell, no reason to work anymore on the cats. I'd say you bought yourself a ticket already.
He's real squinty now.
Huell, can we focus on ladybugs? I really don't know a lot about cats. All right, so Huell now goes on to speak to the ladybug collector's son, and here's where it goes from morbid to macabre.
Well, now you brought Jeffrey today. Why did you bring Jeffrey?
No.
Jeffrey, well, he's out of school now. Normally we catch bugs during school time, but he's out of school, so we got to go.
So this is your first big adventure looking for ladybugs, right?
Yeah.
Jeffrey, you want to lead the way?
He's good at this.
Yeah.
He's a natural.
Yeah, he is. Okay, we're heading up the hill.
That sound is the fluttering wings of the angels abandoning Jeffrey.
Go ahead, Jeffrey. I'm following you.
It's going to be great when the guy gets back from school vacation and he's talking to the other kids. Where'd you go, Maui? Where'd you go, space camp? Where'd you go, into the woods with a 9-foot pedophile looking for insects?
Yeah. Man in doctor's shorts.
Yeah. This guy was all waffle stomper and attitude.
And hands.
He blotted out the sun.
He's the first guy that ever spoke to my dad about his profession and stayed awake.
He treated my dad with just enough respect to get my dad to turn his head.
Just long enough. That's right. And by the way, indoctrinating your son into this horrible ladybug cult, do you think it's a smart move? I mean, in this day and age, but with the internet. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, what else is the son going to do? He doesn't have any other skills. He was born into a family of ladybug collectors.
I know, and he's going to hang out with his friends. What's your dad do? I don't know. I think he works at some insurance company. What's your dad do? He's a lawyer for ladybugs. Like, he can't even get far away from it.
Kind of like suck during career day.
Yeah. Yeah.
So thank you, little Timmy Johnson, an astronaut. Not many people can make that cut. Who's up next? Jeffrey, why don't you bring your dad up here? No. No.
Jeffrey's just in the back of his arms folded. No. No.
Come on up here. The guy, yes, the guy in the cargo shorts wearing the beekeeper cap. Come on up. Don't be shy.
He's what brought 10,000 ladybugs. Yeah.
Your
class.
Dad seems to have a roiling canvas sack. What's in there?
All right, we need to take ourselves a break. Dana Gould in studio. Huell is...
We'll be back.
Be prepared. He will be amazed because he's going to see a tree covered with ladybugs coming up. And then we'll take it home. Dana Gould, Huell Hauser, and you next.
Back to the... Adam Carolla Show with special guest Dana Gould.
Here to greet us is the main man,
Adam Carolla.
Well, forget about me. What about Dana Gould? Dana the Hammer Gould, everybody. Dana can be found at the Punchline in San Francisco tonight through Saturday night. Two shows on Friday and Saturday. Tickets on sale now at punchlinecomedyclub.com. Now, Huel. Huel is a guy I discovered many years ago. Huel is a fixture out here in Southern California. I don't know if they have him where you are, but he's been on PBS out here for 1,000 years.
He started in San Francisco. He's in a show that's called Bay Area Back Roads.
Right.
All California markers.
I went to that bar once.
Exactly.
Back Roads.
Not what I expected. Yeah,
look,
Bay Area Back Roads.
All these men are hugging.
Now this is fun.
And I don't know why, but it never gets old. I've known about Huel for years, but it just dawned on me about a year ago when I was watching him at the Baghdad Cafe, by the way, speaking to the guy who owned the Baghdad Cafe, which is just basically a greasy spoon in the middle of the desert.
Howdy, how you doing?
When he interviewed that guy who was not mic'd on the phone, I said, he must be part of our program. And I know maybe you guys have heard this one before, but it never gets old for me. So play that one, Bald Brian.
Howdy, how you doing?
On the phone with the owner.
Well, we're just doing an interview here, finding out about the Baghdad Cafe.
Unmic'd.
Is that picture in there of Burt Lancaster? Why is there a portrait of Burt Lancaster in here on the wall of the Baghdad Cafe?
Tangent.
Oh, you just bought it. He's never actually been here.
Is he aware of what's happening?
They just hung it up. Well, it looks good.
The guy owns a cafe in Newberry Springs, California, which essentially makes Baker, California look like Dubai. Like, you know, it really yeah. does. There's nothing going on there. So first off, where does the owner of the Baghdad Cafe live? Possibly in Baghdad.
In the back of the Baghdad Cafe.
What is he doing that's so important that day? A camera crew is coming down to his cafe to do an expose on his cafe, and he can't make it in the flesh. He's just going to do a phoner to his own work, and then they don't mic up the phone. So yeah. He's just talking to him, but I do love the payday with Burt Lancaster's picture. So he's never been in here. Awesome.
Just hung it up.
All right.
But, you know, the owner is like, he's got a house full of doll parts. You know, it's like tinfoil on the windows. I can't go out in the sun.
He has, yeah, and the doll parts are next to the cutout panels on the milk cartons with the missing kids that he collects and trades as well. That's doesn't like to commingle with the doll parts, by the way. That keeps a nice foil partition between the doll parts and the missing kid partitions. And
how you doing?
Here's a tip for all you nutballs that cut out the missing kids on the milk carton. Always rinse it, or it'll give a sour smell, especially in July. All right. Now, Huel, as we continue with the bug collecting, he's with a ladybug collector. I saw this. A guy goes into the woods. He finds, essentially, they swarm or something. He collects them in a burlap sack and brings them to civilization and then sells them at farmers markets. And by the way, how much money, how pissed is this guy's wife? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. She thought his dad had a lot of money.
Must have been something.
But his dad just won't die.
Maybe she thought when she met him, ladybug collector was some sort of euphemism for drug dealer or some sort of high financier that works some offshore account. So it's like, what do you do, sailor?
Yeah.
Ladybug collector?
I said ladybugs. Oh, do you have any now?
Yeah, can we want to go to the bathroom? It's like, yeah, she must have thought he wasn't literally speaking of this. All right, let's listen to him.
Look at this. The whole tree is covered. Oh, the limb. I don't know. Look at the camera. Can get this right here. Look. There's one leaf right here, and it's covered. It's filled. With ladybugs.
Wow. Insects in the woods. Who would have thought?
Okay, we're leaving the ladybug tree, which is one of the most unbelievable things I have ever seen in my life.
Right.
Really?
he saw a paperclip earlier in the day and clutched his heart.
Kielhauser missed his call.
Go ahead.
I think he might have missed his calling. He would be a great volunteer at the suicide hotline. No matter what is going on in your life, he could give it a positive
spin. Talk to Huel on the line, T.
I just don't really feel like living, and...
Where are you calling from?
My studio apartment in Hollywood.
Oh, that's phenomenal! Is it one of those that gets really hot?
Yeah, I don't have air conditioning. I'm sweating.
And you're calling your friends who are doing much better in their chosen field, and they probably live up in the hills.
Yeah, they do. They all do.
Oh, those are amazing. I've been to a lot of parties up there. Huge houses with various dips and chip selection.
Huel, this is her boyfriend. I'm sorry I had to get on the line, but I feel like you're sort of exacerbating the problem here. She already... Sort of in
a
little
like a
bit.
Failure.
She's a little bit of a shame spiral right now, and you know, hearing about you partying up in the hills with some of your buddies is really. I don't feel like you're helping the situation.
Well, I just think of what you can, but they can do what you do. Go down to the liquor store and buy a pre-made sandwich.
Well, Huel, I failed out of school yesterday, and that was my really big dream. I wanted to be a doctor, and I just couldn't cut it.
So, you know what you have to do is be a doctor and X that off your to-do list, and that opens up more free time. You can go down to Hollywood Toy and Costume. And
she doesn't want to dress like Pocahontas, you understand. She wanted to be a physician, and her dreams have been squelched. She's really close to suicide.
I don't have any reason to live. I really can't think of any reason to make it to tomorrow.
You know, there's so many people that have so much money, they never even get to spend it, and you don't even have any.
Hey, Huel, hate to cut you off again. This is her boyfriend. I feel like you're really making things worse here. Her self-esteem's at all-time low. She owes tons of money in student loans.
I wonder, you could work the rest of your life at the job that you're in now and never even make
dent. I don't even have a job, and I have $60,000 in student loans. I don't have any skills.
She can't get her prescription meds. Her health insurance is expired.
Wow.
she's really in dire straits, Huel.
You could sell parts of your body to make money. I think David Crosby...
We're not going to sell
ranch.
No, I don't think he has a ranch for livers.
This
Huel.
Is another thing I'm really depressed about. I'm not fertile. I can't sell eggs.
Well, you know, but you could be the person that has the hardest time of anyone.
But no, Huel, you know, Huel, are you a family man? Do you have kids?
I know many children.
I think you're kind of missing the point. Do you have kids of your own?
That's open to... Well, here's a tricky definition there.
Are you a married man, Huel?
No, I'm not.
Now, but you have, how old are you now, Huel?
I'm in my late 50s.
Okay,
I'm waiting for the right girl.
You've never been married, Huel?
Well, there's...
A confirmed bachelor?
I'm going to put the phone down for a minute because I have to rub my face with both my hands.
We turned the table on Huel. Huel, your folks are from the Midwest, salt of the earth type, aren't they? Don't they want grandkids?
Well, they're very judgmental people. They have a lot of demands.
But you have volunteered with a lot of children's organizations, Boys and Girls Club.
I like things that are smooth to the touch, like a marble table.
I understand, Huel. Huel, you know, I feel like...
Do you think the Bible is real? Are those things real?
No, you know what? I'm not a literalist, Huel. You'll be fine. No one's judging here. This is SoCal.
That's what I think.
Right.
But tell that to the judge in Morris County, New Jersey.
Well, you know what?
Warrants out?
The statutory rape laws vary from municipality to municipality. A kid says he's 18. 18. You have no reason not to believe him.
Well, he was exactly. Six.
Well, still,
a lot younger.
He was able to hold up 18 fingers.
But you know,
sure, eight of them were toes.
You know how kids, because they're so smart nowadays, they seem older than they are.
Right, right.
So I didn't know he could have been a short 18-year-old on a big wheel. He had tons of polysyllabic words he was throwing around.
It's the Miley Cyrus syndrome.
Right. Yeah, he was precocious.
All right, we have one more clip to play.
By the way, every tributary of the Huellhauser River leads back to that ocean.
It all goes right back there.
Yeah.
Huell has one more arrow left in his quiver. It is this one.
His wonder quiver.
It's the guys singing. Well, this is the father-son team singing the Ladybug song.
You got a ladybug song for us.
Yeah, here we go. Ladybug, a ladybug, you better fly away. Ladybug, a ladybug, Doug and Jeff are coming today. To put you in a sack, throw you over their back and start to pack and put you up for sale today. So ladybug, a ladybug, you better fly away.
I also sing, new girl at the community college, you better fly away. Gonna throw you in a sack.
Yeah, I could picture, like, if it was a movie, it would cut from that. The camera would pan around and see a bunch of people that didn't look amused with a sign in the background that said Child Protective Services. Yeah. And then someone would turn to somebody else, like a woman with a short crop haircut, and say, well, I've seen all I need to see.
Or you do the match dissolve to the kid at 32 years old going, ladybug, a ladybug. And then the slow pan out to see that he's on a chair tying the noose around his neck in his garage.
Right, yeah, it's slow dissolve. He's standing on an apple crate. His pants are around his ankles. There's a single tear coming down his eye. He's looking at a picture of him and his father on the wall in ladybug outfits. No, better yet, their head through a piece of plywood painted like a ladybug from the Ladybug Festival.
Dousing himself with a thing of gasoline. Glug, glug, glug. Ladybug, ladybug.
As he rips the top off a flare and in slow motion starts moving the hand toward him, we hear this ladybug, and then we just see the silhouette of the bright light on the side of the garage wall.
Now, I think if Huell ever did, God forbid, hurt a beautiful child, it would be like Lenny in Of Mice and Men. He would just be trying to touch it because it was soft.
Yeah, he wouldn't know.
Right, just pet its hair.
He's a man of tremendous size and strength who loves, some would say, too much.
You don't want to be out in the woods with Huell when he suddenly turns to you now. Now, was it true that if I kill you, I become you?
Hey, how soft is this soil? Is this permafrost, or could I dig a shallow grave? Louis, go get the army spade from the van.
You're probably wondering about the bag of lye.
It's with a sack of ladybugs.
You seen that scene from Goodfellas? Remember that, where they threw him in the trunk? Yeah. Louis, get the duct tape, the ether rag, and the snow shovel. I got some, give me about 2 hours. Oh, yeah, that's right, water-soluble lube. All right, thank you, Louis. Wait in the van and do me a favor. Go in the van, roll the windows up, close your eyes, and count to 2 million.
Yeah.
I'll be back with a sweaty brown about 2 hours.
Louie, I want you to go in the van, close your eyes, and think of your favorite Christmas.
All right, now, you sing that ladybug song 1,500 times, and I'll be right back.
Just imagine Huell going out, you know, he's down in Southern California. He's driving out to Fontana to see a warehouse of old magic props. and he's just flipping the dial and comes on the show. And he has to pull over. He's just mortified and horrified. What are these two gentlemen? Does everyone hear this?
And he's like, Louis, is this true? And Louis gives a very slow nod as we show his hand slowly reaching for the door. And then Huel hits the power locks on the van and laughs maniacally. And then again, it's just the jib shot as the van speeds off into the desert. And we hear Louis' muffled scream as the van speeds away.
You just see Huel duct taping a hose to the exhaust pipe, putting it in the back window, then gets in the car. Lady bug, lady bug.
Larry?
Yeah?
You enjoying Huelhauser?
This is the funniest damn Huelhauser bit you guys have ever done.
Well,
Dana Gould, you are hilarious. Hilarious. You know, the thing that's funniest about this is that you can make your voice. I just said the S word.
Well, let's see if we can do it. Do you have a... We'll try. I know Dana does a spot-on Huel.
I don't know if I feel good about that.
Do we have a... he was born to play Huelhauser.
Larry can't tell the difference between Dana and Huel.
Play a little Huel, and then Dana, you go verbatim, and let's see if we can tell. I'm going to close my eyes.
Howdy, how you doing?
Howdy, how you doing?
Well, we're just doing an interview here, finding out about the Baghdad Cafe.
Well, we're just doing an interview here and finding out about the Baghdad Cafe.
And so all you have to do is slow Huel down and you get Al Gore.
Find the old guy who's got the rock collection. I don't know why.
You slow it down 10% to get Al Gore?
If you slow Huel down, the planet is on fire. The earth has a fever.
Give me the old guy with the rocks and then we'll take a break.
Tell me about all these rocks.
Tell me about all these rocks.
Rocks that I picked up over a period of years.
Right, we understand they didn't...
Wow, this is amazing. You...
We understand the rocks didn't just fall into the rusted coffee can, old man. You had to pick them up over the years. We'll take ourselves a break. Dana Gould in studio. I'll tell you, you could make yourself a buck. Forget about heading out to the Punchline in San Francisco. How about you just head out to the Corolla House next party? We put some stilts on you and some waffle stompers.
Get myself some beige clothes.
Well, you get yourself khaki cargo pants, just do Huel at parties.
You all have earned your pay right now.
You just follow me around and go, 7 layers in 1 dip. That's amazing.
Rudy.
We'll take ourselves a break. Dana Gould and the news next.
Unused Bowflex.
Back to the Adam Carolla Show. In theaters March 21st, Adam Carolla in The Hammer.
Oh, you're off to a great start. You put on 3 pounds.
Muscle mass, coach. I just don't see how you can be skinny and fat at the same time.
You know, I've seen guys like you before. You're one of those 95%ers who never quite gives it everything he's got.
Actually, I'm a 75%er who's given you an extra 20%.
The Hammer, in theaters March 21st. Now back to the Adam Carolla Show.
I actually used that line in my life once.
You did? How'd it go over?
Well, when I used to build at people's houses, I'd get about 75% or 80% through with the bookcase. I built them, and then I'd never come back again. And they'd go, oh, you're one of those 95%ers who never comes back and finishes. And I said, no, I'm a 75%er, and I'm giving you an extra 20%. Made them feel much better.
And by the way, as people have told you over and over and over and over again, you're actually a good actor.
Well, the movie's actually a good movie. Coming out the 21st of March. So we'll go watch that. Look forward to that. Dana Gould in studio at the Punchline. Sam Francisci.
I still find it weird that I'm in L.A. now, and I have a show tonight in a different city.
Yeah, that is weird.
Yeah, it's modern times, but it is weird. Time. Yeah.
I've been doing it for, I don't know, 400 years.
Right.
It's still weird to me.
That you'll be on a stage in San Francisco this evening doing hour and a half of Huelhauser.
Straight
Ladybug song.
No other material.
Just the Ladybug song.
Yeah, it's just basically Huelhauser and Vincent Price for an hour.
It seems like the tree is filled with ladybugs. That's right.
T, you got the news, baby girl?
Sure do.
Teresa Strasser with tomorrow's news. Today.
last night it was the girls' turn on American Idol. Amanda Overmeyer, she is one of two people on Vote for the Worst. Mm-hmm. You know that website? They mm-hmm. basically kept Sanjaya on the show last year.
Mm.
Well, I think she may have de-Sanjayified herself because she sang last night. She gave a great performance and the judges loved her.
Unfortunately, it was gospel night.
And she's talking about Jesus?
Hey, does Vote for the Worst work for Dancing with the Stars?
Oh, I bet you they do have. I wonder if it does.
Stephen Hawking again.
You know what would be nice? I just go up there, and instead of doing the dance, I just walk out to the middle of the stage, and I defecate. And then I pull my pants up, and I go, look, I'm with a totally hot blonde. I'm Mr. Popular, and I'm going to be around for a long, long time. Now, you monkeys, you go ahead and dance for the man. I got my army lined up via the radio and Vote for the Worst, and I'll see you guys in the next round. And I just turn around and leave.
That's a great strategy until you find out that they don't cover Dancing with the Stars.
Well, that's why I got to check into it first.
Yeah, we'll look into that. In other reality show news...
Well, shouldn't they be expanding?
You would think.
Right.
I will look into that.
Please.
Franchise.
I don't know if they cover Celebrity Rehab with Dr. Drew, but if they did have Vote for the Worst, you'd have to say it would be Conaway.
They're all right. Well, they're all working for Nader now.
Jeff Conaway left a little early. Tonight mm-hmm. is the season finale of VH1 Celebrity Rehab with your old partner, Dr. Drew. Here, Jeff Conaway gives us some insights on his time on the show.
I was on as many substances as I could possibly fit in my body. You know, hydrocodone, Norco. I was eating them like candy. Diazepams.
There's the OxyContin.
Cocaine. You know, I've been an actor, professional actor, for 48 years. I'm very comfortable with cameras. I wanted people to say, if he can do it, I can do it. I thought it was kind of fun, to tell you the truth.
He's high as a kite, though. That's why he's comfortable with cameras. He's comfortable with cameras like people, like Chuck Berry's girlfriends were comfortable with cameras in the bathroom. They didn't know they were there.
It's the level of, but those people, they have that pathological narcissism that they're terrified of no cameras. That's when they have a problem.
Yeah.
I'm just eating lunch and no one's watching me.
I also like the part where guys, the math doesn't really work out, where like 48-year-old guys goes, I've been in the acting game for 47 years now. So at 9 months, you had your SAG card. You know, like at 9 months, you got on the phone like, hey, Marty, look, I got a call back for that Beatrice spot, but I want to go out on Falcon Crest. What's going on?
You have me going in for a Downy commercial, and there's no sides.
Yeah, there's no sides. Where's the breakdown?
Just roll on the towel. That's all they want you to do.
And by the way, I didn't hear anything about 5 and under. Now, what's up? Are they going to Taft Hartley my diapered ass, or
Downy's
how are we going to do this?
Downy's a conflict. I've already done Tide.
I'm signed to Tide. You understand if the Tide people see me handling either Snuggle or Downy in the next calendar year, I'll be out of my keister.
They're going to break my fingers.
Jesus Christ, Marty, if I have to get out of my crib or my bouncy chair thing that's in the door jam and come down to your office.
Don't make me toddle over there.
Don't make me get my big wheel and come down to your office. It'll be hell to pay. You're lucky I can't make it upstairs.
I'm teething and I'm in a bad mood as it is.
I'm colicky. I'm coming over there. Yeah, like Jeff Conaway's been acting for 48 years, except for he's not 50. How does that work?
I guess I could say this. I'll be.
He
very
was in
quick.
Taxi when he was a zygote.
I saw him once at the 2020 video on Ventura Boulevard in Studio City, the one across from the Long's Drugs by the Baskin Robbins, coming out of the western doors of the porno section.
Mm. Oh, yeah, I love that. Yeah, I love that.
Shame.
Shame swing.
Now, was he wheeling?
And I do like the theme, too. It's like, howdy, big jug porn. We're going to have a showdown in my bachelor apartment. Let's call it high noon.
He, I'm not kidding. I'll swear on my mother's soul, he had a stack of porn that was like tottering, like
I went to that.
Unfeasible stack.
Was he walking or in his chair?
He was holding them with both hands. It was like holding the bottom and then like balancing it against his chest.
You know,
if I could say one thing about porn,
yeah.
You only need one.
It was porn,
maybe two.
It was essentially porn jingo. I've happened porn. In to that 2020 and been to the porn. And the important thing when you're in a civilian rental place that has porn in the corner, the important posture is to discover it. Hey, what's this? What is this mysterious room with naked people? Hadn't noticed this before. I was here to grab Joe versus the volcano, but let me just pop my head into this new locale, see what we have in here. Yeah. Hey, it's a couple of gals hugging. I'll try this one out. Yeah. You can't walk in and make a beeline.
No.
You have to walk in and look around. Hey, what have I doors. Got here?
They have those doors. Yes. Is this a saloon?
Hey, give me two fingers playing a KY. Barkeep.
I'm Tracy Strasser. That was the news.
Oh, sorry, baby. Oh,
tomorrow's news.
I know, Atlanta.
Today, Tracy Strasser.
There's only enough room in this porn shack for one chronic masturbator.
So, and then you have to check out. It's like, all right, Tess of Duberville's, 7 days in May, and 7 gays in Ray. What are you doing? Come on.
Jada
I wrote
Gould.
That as I said it.
In studio. We'll take a quick break. Back to wrap it up next. Well, where did the time go? I want to thank Jeff Probst for coming in. Survivor. Duh. Fans versus favorites. Tonight, 8 o'clock, CBS. Jimmy Kimmel. What's he doing? I guess he's got his own show on ABC.
Tangent.
12:05. In the, well, technically AM, but weeknights, ABC. Jimmy Kimmel, I think I'll be on next week. Dana Gould, The Punchline in San Francisco, tomorrow through Saturday. And you can go ahead and hear this show at free2hd at adamcarolla.com. So until next time, this is Adam Carolla for Teresa Strasser and Dana Gould saying mahalo.
I actually do work for the Hitler state.